You're listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Learn more at wearelibertarians.com.
Oh, the Johnny Rocket Launchpad is liberty. Each week, we strive to bring you the best guests in talk radio. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad delivers weekly interviews of noteworthy politicians, experts, and activists. The Johnny Rocket Launchpad is bringing the party to the Libertarian Party and launching ideas in your direction. Check us out at johnnyrocketlaunchpad.com. You can hear me, Kurt Nelson, and the beautiful Heather Nixon talk about the ideas of liberty. Rock and roll.
Hey there, Liberty lovers. This is Mark Clare of the Lions of Liberty podcast, where we strive to bring you great conversations about the ideas of liberty 3 days a week, every Monday, Wednesday, and Friday. Check us out at lionsofliberty.com.
Hey guys, this is Roger Paxton, and if you're fed up with the government running every single aspect of your life, but you're not listening to the Lava Flow podcast yet, then what's wrong with you? Check us out at thelavaflow.com, or just go back to sucking up to the government. The Lava Flow podcast, striking the root every single episode.
We are supported by listeners like you. Donate per month or make a one-time donation through PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com. Welcome to We Are Libertarians. I am your host, Chris Spangle. We Are Libertarians brings you all of the irreverence modern politics deserves and all of the fake opinions you need. We explain to you what the hell is happening in our world today and how we can fix it by thinking differently. This is a podcast brought to you by the We Are Libertarians Network. Please be sure to rate and review us on iTunes, like us on Facebook, share this episode with friends, and support us through PayPal or Patreon at wearelibertarians.com. We are supported by listeners like you. So $1 per episode by pledging $5 a month helps us grow. We are always taking your questions and comments via email at editor@wearelibertarians.com. We were off last week because I was ill. I'm still ill. I've had a thing.
A little thing?
A little thing, Greg. Greg Lenz joins us. Greg, how are you?
I'm doing well. I didn't get to take the week off because I was basically forced to podcast at a Christmas party in true libertarian fashion. Hey, we're all having fun, being social, talking about normie things. Let's go up to Jeremiah's office and have a podcast. Next thing you know, Seth Nyman, who's been on before.
Right.
We relived how he introduced himself, which was at a David Friedman versus Randall Holcomb debate for Young Americans for Liberty.
Right.
He comes up to me, says, I'm Seth Nyman. You're Greg Lenz from We Are Libertarians. You look nothing like you sound. Here's why you're wrong about a voluntarist society. It was arguably the most autistic thing I've ever experienced.
We met so many new people at that event. That was quite an event.
Hannah Weber, will eventually be on,
eventually. She's been threatened. She texts me like every day about libertarian things, but she can't find the time to be on the podcast. We need more women on this show because Chloe, who was supposed to be, apparently Chloe was supposed to be a co-host at one point.
Wouldn't she? She's not in Indiana, is she?
Hell if I know. I haven't heard from her in months.
Hmm.
She disappeared. She just moved.
And she went galt.
She went galt, and the last time I heard about Chloe, she was co-hosting a different podcast, huh. A different libertarian podcast, so I'm sure she's doing a great job for them.
Well,
so
you know, sometimes you have to work your way up from single A.
I talked to Gina every once in a while. Gina's doing great. She's legally bound not to be on the podcast.
Okay.
Not surprising.
Legal issues preclude her from coming on. But Gina sends her best to the audience. If you don't know who we're talking about, then go back to the glory days.
Her last appearance, her and Harry had quite the contested exchange.
That's right. Yeah. Harry Price joins us as well. Harry, how are you?
I'm going good.
We're not talking about racial issues today, but Harry... Harry is our official racism insurance.
Mm-hmm.
And he led off tonight by calling you and I house honkies, which is deeply offensive.
Well, Harry is whiter than both of us.
Didn't really use that term. I just more of used the definition. You just added a term to it.
As you have your Perrier sitting before you.
Got to have real water.
Who? What?
He mocks.
That's cold water. That's flat water.
How many grills do you own?
I got six, and I'm going for seven tomorrow, hopefully.
Not the ones that you put in your mouth.
Yeah. These are my, charcoal grill. I forget. Five charcoal, one propane.
No electric?
That's not a grill. That's just a glorified iron.
Let me explain something to you, Harry iron. Bryce. You come over one day.
Iron.
I'm going to grill you some
meat. Without the steam.
And I'm going to grill you some meat, and you will not believe your mouth.
My mouth has a lot of meat in it, and I do know which meat has nice smoky flavor from charcoal, the way God intended it, and,
You mean lighter fluid.
No. See, you're doing charcoal wrong. See, a lot of people, do charcoal wrong, like you.
He doesn't do charcoal at all. You just assumed he did.
You assumed my energy my energy preference.
Which you use for, how you generate your BTU is by plugging it into a wall, getting it from that cheap crap energy. What you need to do is do it just like your ancestors did and burn something. It's better for you.
It tastes better the way that I cook it.
No, slow smoke on charcoal. Indirect heat,
aren't you
it's better.
Judging before you've actually had a chance to experience it?
That's exactly right.
Everything we do is talking about suspending judgment until you've experienced
exactly
it.
Exactly right.
I've had a sandwich out of a sandwich maker, which is basically what his grill is.
It is not a sandwich
it's
maker.
Not a woman.
Or ribs from a crock pot.
Oh, see,
and
that's,
calling it barbecue?
That's disgusting. On that, you and my friend, we agree. That is not barbecue. My ex-stepdad used to boil ribs and then would put them in a crock pot and call it barbecue, and it was the most disgusting. It tasted like dish soap. This is not barbecue, sir. Yeah. And no, I will not call you dad.
Barbecue.
You're not supposed to live here. Sorry. It's going to be one of their shows.
Get off my lawn.
Today was my last day of vacation. So I am on vacation until January 3rd. Today is
Pearl.
The 15th. I am done with my Christmas shopping.
You really?
I am. I have bought, except for yours. I've got
yours. I've had it for a little while though.
I've got to get yours. I haven't ordered it yet. I know exactly what it's going to be, and it's hilarious.
I have one for Harry too.
Oh. Ooh.
And so I've done my Christmas shopping. I've bought my iPhone 7.
Yes.
It
was updating. That's why you've been phoneless.
Right.
Is that really an update? Behind that BlackBerry that.
I got excited because I got a text and it said, "Hey, do you miss me?" And I was hoping that maybe it was an ex-lover, a long-lost girl.
A forgotten Tinder swipe?
friend zone of the past that had now realized her mistake.
She wants to meet for lunch tomorrow?
No, it's Jeff Fibbert.
Oh, that's the most disappointing thing you could ever learn.
Jeff, the breakaway star of the last episode, I only put, did you hear the minute and a half at the end that I put? Did you
no.
hear what I chose out of the, there was a 40-minute rant that little Jeff Fibbert did on the last podcast, and at the very end I put a little taste. Yeah, the part where he's talking about being outside of the buffet, and we talk about how that was Weimar Germany. And but the whole thing, no one could ever hear it.
No.
It would be illegal. I couldn't. Legally, we cannot post it.
Yeah. Yeah. There are some similarities between what Trump said he could do and get away with it and still win the election and what Jeff Fibbert advocated for.
Absolutely.
Wow. So I think that little guy had it in him.
Yeah. No, he's very angry. So
the little ones.
I went and I got my groceries, so I have bought all my groceries, so I'm ready for hibernation.
He barely one tripped it in here. I had to bring in one package.
Yeah,
he was trying to one trip.
Did
it
you
in.
Just look over and snap?
Well, I got my whole milk. I got my eggnog. I got my buttermilk. I've got my 3 pounds of hamburger.
I got egg milk or regular milk, whole milk,
mm-hmm.
Buttermilk,
yes. Buttermilk,
eggnog. Any other 2% vitamin D?
No. What do you need vitamin D for?
I don't know. You're the connoisseur of milk since you buy two kinds.
That
is privilege.
Well,
it's privilege.
And it's none of the percents.
I have flax milk. I have flax milk in there.
That's juice. It didn't come from a cow.
Well, I'm lactose intolerant. I only keep a little bit of milk around for cooking.
So the buttermilk and the whole milk's for cooking?
That's for, when I weightlift.
Get swole?
Right, yeah.
For the gains. You do it for the gains.
I crack 4 eggs in my mouth whole, and then I have some buttermilk.
My grandpa that fought in World, he was a snipe, sniper and or sharpshooter in World War II in Japan. He drank buttermilk with pepper in it,
ugh.
And then a piece of toast with chipped beef gravy on it.
Ugh.
Yeah, that, Marine.
Well, to each his own.
Mason, 32nd degree.
Yeah, I like for breakfast. I like eating like crepes. We'll make like a blueberry compo with it, and I like to get the heavy whipping cream, and I actually make cream, not that stupid canned crap.
Well, I have the eggnog because it's a delicious holiday treat.
You do drink that? It doesn't wreck you?
No, I have just a little. I have to have a little.
So you put it in like a NyQuil cup and...
Right, yeah. I have I have 2 teaspoons of eggnog. I can have... it's
then
ice,
gets tipsy.
It's ice cream, man. Around 27, 28, I just like... I couldn't eat ice cream anymore, and I loved ice cream. I ate it all the time.
It was an overnight thing? You never like noticed going back that you had stomach aches from ice cream?
Never in my past.
Wow.
Is it ice cream or gelato? Can you have gelato, though?
No.
Oh, explain, man, what gelato is for us non-privileged Terry.
The easiest way I can... what's the best way to try to explain this to other people? It's think of just ice cream with egg. How about that? That's the easiest way. It's
eggnog.
No.
I like the, you know, the creamy egg, you know, of Culver's ice cream.
That's custard.
Custard is great.
It's frozen custard, not ice cream.
So, but
that's a clear difference.
Yeah.
Don't assume the categorization of custard.
Yeah, that's like calling Italian ice icy.
But it messes me up. Uh-huh. So hold on.
Okay.
So at one point, I just couldn't eat ice cream anymore. I used to love hot fudge milkshakes, and then I started eating ice cream, and it would feel like muscle spasms in my stomach. Yeah, and so I can have limited dairy, so I just try not to overdo it, and I never feel good. Like if I eat a lot of dairy,
cheese? Because I know you like cheese.
Yeah, no, if I eat pizza. Uh-huh. I feel abysmal the next day.
Wow.
So, and it all started around 27.
That sucks.
Oh, yeah. So my sister is the same way.
Weird. Late onset.
Yeah, that's about when it happens. Yeah, because you as you age, your body wears out of certain things, and one of those in lactose intolerance case is the ability, the enzyme, to break down milk. But if you take lactate will give you a temporary upshot of those enzymes, and so you can have ice cream.
Okay, so
weak genes.
Inferior race.
That's
the Bavarians are very strong genes. In fact, some say the best genes.
So I was going through some emotional pain, and as you can tell by my photos, I like to eat my pain. And about a year and a half ago, I decided it was summertime. I was like, you know what? I don't care. I'm just going to have a hot fudge sundae for dinner.
From where?
From...
Or did you make it?
Ritter's.
Ritter's.
Mm. So Ritter's is right over here by my house, taunting me every time I go to the library. And so I had hot fudge...
Like the snake with the apple.
I ate ice cream on an empty stomach. It was the longest night of my life.
Really?
I was on the bathroom floor in the fetal position crying because it hurt. I didn't actually cry, but it hurt so bad. So yeah, you just... It's a whole problem. I can't really eat a lot of... we've made fun of my healthy eating habits on this show over the years, but I can't eat a lot of just refined flour and refined sugar. It just... I can't do it anymore. Huh. It just doesn't make me... You just don't feel good when you eat a bunch of white bread.
Yeah, well, yeah. I mean, yeah.
So
there's a reason that it's... The texture and the, you know, there's a reason it's perfectly white.
Right. Anything
it's
that
meant to be looked at.
You ever
looked
at a wheat field and saw some, but now albino, you know, wheat grain? I don't
right.
think so.
Right. So yeah, what we're saying is white is not good.
Yeah.
Well, I'm just saying that it's an illusion.
Yeah. No, anything that is overly processed like that, it's just not good for you.
Mayonnaise.
Right. I was going through...
Salad dressing is vastly superior for...
I was at Target, and I picked up the last gift and decided to get some groceries. And I'm walking through, and I look, and I'm going through the freezer case of all the things that I used to buy and used to eat. And one of them was the microwavable White Castles, a six pack.
No, you didn't.
All the time.
What? Okay, all right. You live in a state that has White Castle. You can get like live White Castle
within a five minute drive.
It's 24 hours.
Yes.
Within a 5 minute drive.
You know, and you bought it frozen.
$6 for six sliders.
That's outrageously expensive.
Then
why are you paying that much for a slider?
$6.99
Better be cheese.
$6.99
Are they cheese sliders?
You can have cheese or hamburger, Harry. And it comes in a little cellophane wrapper, and you microwave two of them, and they're like half the size of a regular one.
Oh, they're small.
They shrink because they're made from toxic waste.
Right, because they're so processed.
It's like meat paste.
It is.
It's the best meat.
It's so gross. Okay. And you wrap them up in the paper towel, and you put them in the microwave for 90 seconds, and then, you know, the middle is freezing cold, and the edges are blazing hot.
I am, like, ready to vomit. It sounds like you just, took the top layer off of a freshly opened Spam can and slapped it on some soggy buns.
Yeah. It is so incredibly gross.
Oh, and then the onions. Oh, yeah. It's totally normal for onions to just sit uncooked and then all of a sudden be nuked.
Yeah.
it's going to be all limp. Why would you do that?
Because...
Just call ahead. Call for the Crave case. Go there. Pick it up. It'll be there waiting on you.
Because I was trying to kill myself much quicker than I am now. Like, I'm not saying that I have a good diet. I might have had a Big Mac at some point this week. But... I at least make an effort. Like, I have no plan, but I know that something must be done.
You have grain silos like Ben Carson would be proud of.
No, I eat rice and beans all the time. I love rice and beans.
When I used to do MMA, my cheat meal used to be.
You used to do MMA?
Yeah, my cheat meal used to be like White Castle. My cheat day was awful. I would wake up early in the morning, smash a whole bunch of waffles and pancakes, then go to White Castle, eat a Crave case, and just But I've never been really into sweets and stuff like that, so it's
right.
I haven't had McDonald's in over 10 years. It's great.
Yeah.
Once you break the cycle,
absolutely,
and you walk away, it gets easier.
Was it
every
ever
day.
Very good?
When we were kids, McDonald's was great.
Oh, yeah.
The Happy Meal, like that kind of stuff.
Oh,
but like, it's like, there are so many vastly superior alternatives.
No, I'll tell you what. If you go through McDonald's and you get a White Castle with no salt and fries with no salt, then...
Wait, if you go through McDonald's and get... Oh, as comparison.
Right. Okay, so if you go through the drive-thru, anything at McDonald's, order it without salt. Because then they have to make it fresh... And they have to make it over, and they don't overload it with salt, which I'm not a huge fan of.
Mm-hmm.
And so you get fresh hot fries, a fresh Big Mac, and it's amazing.
Then it is
Can
good.
I be honest
oh,
to you?
Okay.
Can
oh,
I be
yeah.
honest what's happening to your food?
Yeah.
Your burger went into the fryer. Your fries went back into the fryer. You have double fried fries.
All fries are double fried, Harry.
Oh, they're double fried, all right. They fried the salt off, and they basically washed it off in the grease. That and your burger.
They washed it off with grease. I'm not seeing the downside here.
I just wanted to let you know they're not really making new fries. They probably just took some other fries out of that they had pre-made, put it back in the basket, dunked it again, pulled it back out, and just put it back
in
the
container. It still tastes good. Who
cares? I'm just saying. That's what's happening.
Right.
It's basically the state fair approach to French fries.
Right.
Yeah. Then your burger, it's like,
because
try
if
that
you
again.
If you don't do that 9 times out of 10, your food is horrible. Literally, one time, you'll get great McDonald's.
Huh.
Yeah.
So,
I like to just go to Culver's and just order a single with everything on it because they don't have those. No one wants a single,
right? Yeah. So they have to make it.
It's awesome.
I love Steak and Shake, and it's $4 for a double cheeseburger and fries, but
quality's unparalleled.
Yeah,
Steak and Shake used to be much much better until the economic downturn. This guy Big Larry bought Steak and Shake. And he's a horrible human being, but a genius, because he put his name on every single Steak and Shake sign. It all says Steak and Shake by Big Larry, and the board wants to fire him, but it is cheaper to keep him as CEO than paying him the licensing fee to keep his name on all the signs or replacing his name on all the signs.
Brilliant.
So he is guaranteed a job.
Some people just have life figured out.
But the dude cut you know, a bunch of things. He, like, doubled the menu, cut costs. The fries are not nearly what they were when we were kids.
Awful.
The food isn't as good, but it's still good.
I haven't been to Steak and Shake in about 4 years because when I started working for my current company, I met just Steak and Shake right down the street, and it's awesome. You can go to there and get Steak and Shake. But obviously someone in our work uniform went there and had to piss somebody off. You get, like, the world's worst service there.
Oh.
Yeah, we were at the point that we felt like we were sitting there, because we get an hour lunch break. We were like, wow, I can almost, like, leave here. I still had to get my food. It was like 45 minutes into my
lunch.
At Steak and Shake.
That's a hate crime.
And, yeah, it wasn't even like we went through the drive-thru. We sat down and, like, ordered our
fine
food.
Fine dining.
Yeah.
Had ourselves a nice little hour-long lunch, you know, at Steak and Shake.
Yeah. It was easier for me to drive all the way onto the fort and get something there and then just drive to the quick Steak and Shake off of I-70 and try to get some food.
Yeah, no. I love fast food, and I know that how bad it is for me, so I really just cut it out. And
you were on the burrito kick for a while, the Qdoba and Chipotle.
Yeah. But that, man, that can make you fat. That's a lot of calories in
the
those
beans.
Burritos. Oh, just the and the guac.
Yeah. So you got to walk away from the burritos and the fajitas there. You got to walk. What?
I do.
Anything avocado, double.
I hate it all.
What?
Oh.
I love avocado.
What is wrong with you?
I know.
I used to be the same way, too. I fixed some Mexican's computer, and I had him pay me in food. And
in avocados?
He made me guac.
It's okay. You can say that.
It was so good. Yeah, he was actually Mexican, and it was so good. It was actually the best guac I've ever had. No guac. None of the guac compares to that, but everything gets really close.
Sorry, I won't take your fiat currency. I'm going to require that you barter with me with guacamole.
Yeah.
There's a guy that I do free media work for beef, like our friend Woody.
Oh, of course.
Yeah.
Yes.
I do media work, and he just gives me hunks of prime rib.
Oh. Speaking of prime rib, there's this really great sandwich place on the fort that sells this sandwich called the roast beef. It's such good prime rib. Oh, my God.
What's the restaurant?
Fitzgerald's Lunch House. It's just only open for lunch on the fort. It's Fort Bend. If you go up on 56 and post, but it's so good. It's just nice big hump of roast beef and I'm sure to have deep dip your beef into.
Beef dip.
Yeah, your beef dip. And it's called roast beef. It's like really good. Yeah.
All right. Sorry. So
they call it the Riddler.
So
the cats have you triggered and distracted tonight.
So, all right. So here's what we got going on.
You Rihanna'd one of the cats.
No, I didn't hit any of my cats. I love my cats dearly. I love all three of these cats.
That's what Chris Brown said.
But Cornelius is going to live with a different family. Okay? We have.
You literally voted one of your cats off the island.
I did. So Cornelius is very high strung. She's a very sweet cat, but she is meant to be a single cat. And a friend of mine, her cat passed away. And so Cornelius is being sent back. Look at her. She knows we're talking about her, and she doesn't know. This is the first she's hearing about it, and
oh, they know.
She's triggered. So Mittens, since we now have three cats, and she already felt like the outsider in her own home, has decided that she's just a mess. She's a mess. You know, and so I have.
And you don't want a wall.
I have spent. I'm not even going to get into the amount of money that I have spent on cat pheromones. in the last month.
Oh, my God.
Pheromone budget's out of control.
My pheromone budget is ridiculous. Our good friend Jason Doolittle is a veterinarian, and he gives me unbound advice. I hold him in no responsibility. And so when I got the cats, he recommended Feel-Away, and it really has helped to calm them down. But not enough, and so we're going to take the high-strung cat, and she's going to go live somewhere else. And I'm sad about it, but in the meantime, the three of them are fighting, and I couldn't figure out why Mittens has all these scratches on her face. Well, Muffins, the runt of her litter, the littlest cat, this tiny little pussy cat, is beating the shit out of Mittens, who is twice her size and just like a tiger. You know, all muscle. It's so, and they
very sub-dom.
Yeah, so it's out of control, and I'm beside myself about it, quite honestly.
Like, no kidding.
It has me high strung. Work has me high strung. My coworkers have me high strung. My dating life has me high strung. The cats have me out of control. I'm in a state. I am fit to be tied. And then I get online and I read about this Russian shit, and I just,
oh boy,
I'm
let it out,
full triggered, and then I've got ISIS posting about me on their Facebook page, and then, you know, hundreds of people saying, oh, that's the show with the nerd that curses. So so I'm just
You're a nerd that does curse. That's what it does sound like.
Fuck you, Harry.
Does sound like you're the nerd that just found a new word and just wants to use it. My mom's not looking. Look, watch. I can swear too.
That was hurtful.
I'm sorry.
God.
I'm sorry.
And another thing. Greg gets to make memes about me. Aaron gets to make fun of me. Harry gets to make fun of me. You have ruined my Facebook life, because now I get on and I've got 25 people every single day making bad jokes at my expense. They're just being mean to me because they think they can, because it's funny, and it irritates me. I'm irritated.
I'm sorry.
I'm irritated with my own Facebook.
I try not to make mean memes.
You don't make mean memes.
I try to make memes that make women throw themselves at you and call you dear leader.
Do more of that.
I've tried.
All the cool people have stopped, the Canadian ones.
Double production.
It's crowding out.
Double production. I know. So
Oversupply.
I'm overstimulated. So I'm like three notches below Jeff Fibbert right now.
Could it be the cat pheromones in the environment?
Have me riled up.
I'm just saying. Maybe. Is there a connection between when you started the treatment and when you
It's a good question. My tea is very high right now because of the pheromones.
I knew the other day you had it in chat when you were just like, because you posted the status, which was supposed to be humorous, so like, there's no way. See right through that. He's at the point I get where I just go block people.
Yes. I have. I've blocked two people.
It feels so good.
Oh, yeah. Jeffrey Cox and Brian Maloney. I blocked them.
Nice.
Gone. I've wanted to for years. And it's not that, Jeff, it's just that they annoyed me. Like, yeah. They're not bad guys. Like, there are people like Mark Christian, you're a bad guy. Chris Fleener, you're a dick. I blocked you because of those reasons.
Yeah.
But, like, Brian Maloney always has thoughtful points, but he puts that in this libertarian, arrogant way that just gets on my nerves. And I just got to a point one day where I was like, you know what? This is my fucking Facebook page.
I do not serve at your leisure. Right. You exist at mine.
Right. Well, the status was just, it was funny, and it was an invitation for people to do it because they think they're being naughty. And so in chat, I did what?
Or what did you say? I forget what exactly you said. It was in the comedy chat. And you were just like, they've taken all I have left are my three cats and a failed wife or something like in a divorce. What else?
Oh,
I died. I'm like, he needs this vacation so fucking bad.
The ISIS terrorist. My friend Amir, who I committed jihad on accidentally.
Not accidentally, intentionally.
Preemptive jihad.
Sometimes when you troll, you sometimes do things that take it too far, and you don't realize how far it's going to go, and then all of a sudden, it's way farther than you thought it would be. I reported him because I wanted to get the screenshot, and I thought that he'd, you know, get like a warning or whatever. He got a 30-day ban. The world's biggest Trump fan, and I got him banned from Facebook for the election day.
For like the lead up and then solid 20 days after the election, like all the elation he missed.
Yeah.
So
he deserved everything he did.
Yeah.
Keep in mind, this is arguably one of the greatest trolls on the internet I've ever encountered.
He's a great troll. And he's Muslim, and he's from New York, and he's been on the podcast before, and he's, you know, he's my friend. I just was awful to him, and he doesn't want to be my friend anymore over this, which is sort of a petty reason, but okay.
There's one rule.
There's one rule
among the Trilluminati,
which is amongst these Facebook trolls, there's one rule: you don't report people.
Your own.
And so, and guess what? When you have a rule, I'm going to break it, because that's just what, that's what you should do.
And it wasn't so much that as that you just laughed and laughed and laughed about it for 30 days.
It was hilarious.
Amir came back. It's like, I never accounted for his reappearance. It's like, Christ coming back. Like, no. This might be a little bit more serious.
No. I expected him to troll me. Like, I did genuinely apologize to him, because that's what I do.
That makes it worse.
I make, exactly. And he just screenshotted the apology and made fun of me for being a pussy.
Yep.
So, but... So in his status where he was making fun of me, he was like, I'm not going to troll him because his wife left him and he has 3 cats and life has already trolled him enough. And I laughed so hard because it's such a great line.
That son of a...
You're
on the verge of it's either gonna be like permanent blood pressure levels over 200 on the top line, or a decompression.
No, I think
we're
2 weeks. I think we're there. No, I have vacation. Today's the 15th, and I have it till the 3rd. And I only have a couple days where I've got to do stuff for work. So I'm really just going to hibernate for a couple weeks. But I'm getting to the point where I need a serious daily workout regimen and possibly some beta blockers, so to lower the blood pressure, because I'm posting at levels not seen since Maya's greatest sociopathic moments, because like this Russian thing. Let's get into it. This Russian thing has me so mad.
I know, and I was so shocked.
It's okay.
The fake news I knew would trigger you, but then the Russian hacking, I'm like, this is so unspangle.
Because it's all bullshit. So what should we start with? Should we start with the hacking? That's why we invited our friend Harry here. He also didn't want to work out tonight, so he accepted our invitation.
Yeah, I was looking for anything to not run 2 miles today
in 6-degree weather. Yeah. Good call. And
oh god.
And Harry is along with James. James explained why we believe the Russian hacking stuff is all phony baloney. Like a month ago, I think, when James was on.
Yeah, he did a great job.
Great job at the end of one of our episodes explaining why you couldn't really prove that the Russians hacked the WikiLeaks stuff.
Mm-hmm.
WikiLeaks stuff. And the CIA has come out and said that in a basic statement, which I never can remember a time when the CIA comes out and has made a statement like this. Can you, Greg?
No, I can't remember when these agencies, the intelligence community, became so politicized ever.
Yeah. The last time was
McCarthy?
Was Iraq. It was 2003.
But I mean, like, they weren't even like coming out like this.
No.
They're basically like senators. Like,
yes.
Their directors are like,
yes,
party officials that, mm-hmm, are going out and doing daily press conferences about the current state of their internal operations.
So in the Washington Post, it's been reported that, you know, some CIA officials doubt the report. The FBI said that they can't verify it. Administration.
The big contention on that.
The
is
Guardian.
That...
The Guardian reported that UK ambassador to Uzbekistan, maybe.
Mm-hmm.
It was in the Guardian. I posted it on We Are Libertarians, I think, on our Facebook page. At least, if you look up Chris Spangle on my Facebook page, you can find the link to the Guardian article.
And don't make a snide comment, or else
you might get. I try not to block people. I try not to banish people from my kingdom. But I'm unfollowing my post at unprecedented levels.
Mm-hmm.
So I just shit post and walk away.
It's the greatest feeling in the world.
That's what I have to do.
I love it.
I can't, because I can't sit here and look at all these people disagree with me. Because
I'll just go in at the end and be like, TLDR.
Yeah,
and then walk away.
And you, fuck you, Greg Lenz, because you, for the first time, struck at me in a very awful way today.
How?
You in one of the posts, you posted a picture of me where I said, listen, I'm not pro-Trump. Anybody who's followed me knows I'm not pro-Trump.
That's a joke.
I know.
Okay, I was going to say, like,
I'm
that
kidding.
Was, I wasn't see- oh, I thought you were, like, I was like, I did that because I saw everybody ganging up on you, and I was like, you guys need to calm down. Everyone is just super amped on Facebook this morning.
Everybody.
And so I was like, here's Spengel in a Trump hat with a Pence sign in the background.
And everybody took it so seriously.
They did. I was like, my God, people.
And I just commented, you're not allowed to use our audio bits against me on Facebook. that status today,
it triggered everybody.
And it has like 50-some shares. I'll read it here in a second. But... because it kind of sums up what I feel is happening, and I think it's a very dangerous place for us to be. I'm going to come to you in a second because I want you to outline the details of what's been going on. We'll start with the Russian hacking, and then we'll start with fake news, and I want the details of what has been outlined, Greg. I want you to give me the details.
What we can say happened.
So I'm gonna give you a few moments to put that together. But here, let me read to you what I wrote on Facebook today, December 15th, because I think it kind of it's why I'm so ticked off. And since Election Day, I've not been pro-Trump. But I've been decidedly anti-left because at first it was just funny to see them laugh. But now I think they're getting into traitorous areas.
Literally talking about trying to save democracy by unbinding from a democratic decision.
Exactly. Right. So it's an article about Elizabeth Warren is basically crafting a bill that is going to specifically outlaw the president from having business interests that look exactly like Donald Trump's business interests and make it an impeachable offense. So she is crafting legislation that she knows will cause impeachment of a president. So unreal.
If there were Andrew Jackson were only still around to send her to a reservation.
She may watch out because Trump may, you know, get drunk at the White House one day and just, you know, see a photo of Andrew Jackson and say, screw it. He made it.
Yeah.
He made two terms.
So I write the effervescent
Trail
Chris
of
Spangle.
Tears and march all the leftists out of California up into Canada and we take back California.
I'll show you who can own the earth.
Yeah.
Unreal. Now the Democrats are basically crafting legislation that they know will impeach a president. Look, anyone that has followed me for the last 20 months knows that I am not a Trump supporter. I am not happy he's president. I wouldn't have been happy if Hillary won either. I do believe in our Constitution, and the left, the media, and the Clinton machine are doing what frightened me when Trump suggested on October 19th that he wouldn't accept the results of the election. The precedents being set by the Democrats in permanent Washington in an effort to delegitimize or remove a legally and fairly elected president is extremely dangerous for the Republic. Frankly, a lot of highly elected Democrats are acting in a treasonous manner simply because they lost. We all understand that our current government barely resembles the Constitution, but this is pushing it. Every American needs to set aside their partisan blinders and decide if they want to be ruled by laws. The opposite is very scary. This is a time for choosing. The pendulum swings the other way and wider each time. Because what we've had since the election of Trump, I mean, you remember that debate where we talked in our analysis post-debate about how, for me, that when Trump said that he wouldn't accept the results of the election, how that was one of the most frightening moments for me,
the authoritarianism
in the election, because it was all fun and games, and it was all, you know, it's like stuff that is just, it's stuff that we've heard. But when Donald Trump said he wouldn't accept the results of the election, that pushed the unshakable foundations of the United States American Constitution to a place where we become the French, where we are just replacing governments, or it's not a constitutional republic anymore.
Yeah, it's just a progressive playground.
Exactly right, and it becomes whatever the public opinion is at the time. And It's a very dangerous sentiment to undermine the presidency. And I, at the time, said that Donald Trump was being traitorous, essentially. You lose an election, you accept that you hand power over. And every Washington report, you know, is, he is just shaking the foundations of what makes this country great, which is the peaceful transfer of power. You know, every Inauguration Day, it's just bloviating about how great America is because we peacefully hand over.
What an amazing country. We're not all in FEMA camps because of a change in power.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow.
And so for them, it's one of the greatest moments. And so
this is what democracy looks like.
Since then, it was a good solid 2 weeks of them finally getting to a place where everybody realized, oh, okay, Hillary lost because of these 25 things that make Hillary Clinton a horrible person and a horrible politician and a horrible candidate, and she had no coherent economic plan that didn't speak to the people in this country that feel completely disenfranchised. And the media is part of the problem, and we aren't servicing the needs of this group. That lasted, that self-reflection that was accurate, that reflected what actually happened in this, it would happen for 2 weeks, 3 weeks best. And then the CIA, which is an organization that is crafted to lie to the world, including to the American people, which was started by Truman in the 1940s, and between the 40s, 50s, and between the 40s and 50s, became one of the most destructive organizations on the face of the earth for the Third World, which has repeatedly overthrown elections and installed right-wing dictators around the country, which isn't it hilarious that they have a problem with it happening in America, and constantly are promoting American propaganda and overthrowing governments and rigging elections for American candidates in every country on the face of the planet. The hypocrisy to come out and say that the Russians were capable enough of overturning the American election is so retarded, literally retarded. It is outrageous that an organization that has made the Third World so miserable and has destroyed the American reputation so deeply around the world for the last 50, 60, 70 years.
Right now.
Currently. That is responsible for Benghazi.
They're the ones. Turkish coup.
They're the failed Turkish coup. Mm-hmm. They're the reason that Hugo Chavez rose.
Smells like sulfur after Bush left the United Nations room.
Exactly. They're the ones that overthrew Mossadegh in Iran, who was a popular figure in the 50s. And the Dulles brothers didn't like that he was starting to become a populist government that was threatening to not give oil to the Western countries. So they overthrew a democratically elected man in Iran and installed the Shah of Iran. And
who flew in his lunch on the Concorde every day from Paris.
And people felt they knew exactly who did it. It was us.
In Britain. Like, they really lured us in. And
absolutely.
We just took it and scaled it out on a level unforeseen.
And they used people like the Shah of Iran to install him. And then they felt betrayed. And so then they overthrow the Shah of Iran. And that's how you get an Iran that is anti-American. And it's because of the CIA. You have the CIA funding Osama bin Laden in Afghanistan against the Soviets in the 1980s, and lo and behold, because he's worked with the United States, he understands what the United States is like, and so when we invade Iraq, he says to Saudi Arabia, don't let these guys in here. They're never going to leave. I know what they're like. Let the Mujahideen fight Saddam Hussein and protect Kuwait and the Holy Land. And instead, we kept three air bases there.
We'll build one right in Riyadh.
And Osama bin Laden then activates Saudi Arabia, and then they recruit 18 people to fly planes into the United States. They bomb the World Trade Center in 1993. They bombed the World Trade Center with two of our planes on 2001. Saddam Hussein, because we didn't like the people that have overthrown our overthrown dictator in Iran. We started giving gas to Saddam Hussein. We start giving him weapons illegally.
Donald Rumsfeld says in a quote, 1983, our greatest strategical Middle Eastern ally.
Absolutely. And you know what happens?
Rummy, hell of a job.
Less than a decade later, they're using those weapons against us. So the CIA, at the hands of people like Donald Rumsfeld, Brzezinski, who is the dad of Zygislaw Brzezinski, George Bush was the head of the CIA, George H.W. Bush. You have an organization that is an extremely un-American and corrupt, awful organization that commits atrocities around the world to overthrow democratically elected people around the world, and we pay for it. And if we elect people who put people, and Hillary Clinton is at the very heart of it. Hillary Clinton is the one who is letting the CIA run guns through the Benghazi embassy to what became ISIS. And then they let Ambassador Stevens die because they don't want that secret getting out. So
we're not entirely sure that we had the authority to do that. Really?
Mm-hmm.
You didn't. There wasn't a question of if you did ever. You actually did not.
Why the fuck do you think that they're driving brand new Toyotas built in Indiana and ISIS right now? Why do you think they're using American weapons against Assad and the Russians in Syria? It's because we gave them to them. And it was the CIA that did it. So when a president-elect who is a nationalist president, who is not somebody who is going to accept their briefings and has said so, mm-hmm. when a president-elect who is somebody that is not a fan of who is more non-interventionist than Hillary Clinton.
Yeah.
So when
he's a pragmatist, and that's just it. Everything is through the framework of,
absolutely.
Is this pragmatic?
Does this work in our interests?
Right.
Yeah.
And that's it.
So simple. What does the CIA do? They panic.
Broken Jimmies.
And three months in, they release a statement, and they say what? What did they say exactly? What is the great argument that they have that Russia interfered in our election?
Russia clearly has been controlling the leaking information in a manner that they were electing a Trump, essentially. We can tell that they have hacked the DNC, or we can allege, based on patterns and how it was done, that they are responsible for wanting Donald Trump and for winning the election based on how information was leaked out.
And so then we have people run with the ball who have no idea how cybersecurity works, who have no idea, they have no facts, they have no hard evidence, they have the word of an intelligence agency that is built to lie to the world. How do we know that they didn't release a statement to fuck with Russia? That this is part of their plan to destabilize some piece of Russia's game? How do we... And instead, what happened is every liberal media outlet started picking up this fake news bullshit narrative saying that organizations... We'd be fake news if we were big enough. And you know what that means? That at some point you shared a Russia Today link. RT.
I've shared many. RT and Pravda.
Right.
Yeah.
Russia Today is a Kremlin-backed news organization. On this program, I have criticized people like Adam Kokesh for having a show on Russia Today, because Russia Today is a propaganda arm built to send Russian propaganda into the United States. But do you know how many people actually read Russia Today? You know how many people are actually connected to any information that Russia Today gives out? Think of how small libertarians are. It's probably 5% of those people, okay?
They know about it exclusively through the framework of Kokesh.
Exactly right. They know it through one source. You know, Russia Today shared had a third party presidential debate at one point with Daryl Perry and two other also rans in the presidential debate. You know how many libertarians knew that took place? Me and Harry. Yeah. And Daryl Perry and everybody in New Hampshire, in Keene. Okay?
So, it's because Harry is to Daryl Perry as Trump is to Putin.
So you have this liberal professor and then this unknown group.
They actually know Daryl Perry. Trump doesn't know Putin.
And then this unknown group that somebody like a George Soros could have set up in an afternoon started listing fake news sites. Like the Daily
Drudge Report.
Like the Drudge Report.
Which doesn't produce content. It links to other news sources.
It's an aggregate. Source. Yeah, it's an aggregate.
It's literally a 1992 website where a dude posts links. Yeah. Okay? It doesn't produce news. Alex Jones isn't a news producer. Alex Jones is an opinion giver. Glenn Beck's The Blaze has journalists, but they're more opinion than they are journalism. Red State, Human Events. These sites have, all of these sites, even Alex Jones and InfoWars, has some standard of what they're going to publish. Even we have some standard of what we're going to share and publish. Now, it comes down to our worldview and what Greg and I think that you need to know when we share links and when we share information. Yes, it fits our worldview, but it's through our paradigm. So we share a link from Russia Today at some point, and then all of a sudden we're a Russian propaganda. When in 2013 on this program, what did I say about Vladimir Putin?
He was the next Hitler.
He was the next great dictator that would do exactly what he's been doing. Glenn Beck is one of the most anti-Trump voices in this country. He is one of the most anti-Vladimir Putin voices in this country. The Blaze is an arm against Vladimir Putin in this country. And he's fake news. He's Russian propaganda. It makes no sense. There's no standard to it. Define fake news. There isn't a definition of fake news.
Anything outside of the AP Newswire is fake news.
Anything that is not produced by a liberal or some...
From Vox Slate and The Atlantic.
Hipster nerd with his stupid scarf and his glasses sitting there... Oh, sorry, that's Glenn Beck. Who is working out of a New York, you know, venture
co-working space?
The co-working space, venture funded. You know, reading the Daily Beast every day. The New Yorker is my Bible. That sort of bullshit. Who just link baits New York Times and Washington Post stories? And I'm sorry, when Brian fucking Williams comes out and starts lecturing me on fake news, fuck you. You people have no credibility with me.
There isn't
you any... just completely blew the biggest election in our history. Nate Silver was the closest, and he said Trump had a 90% chance of losing. And he was the only honest one. And you know what the Huffington Post, a real news outlet, according to these people, said? Mm-hmm. What's wrong with Nate Silver? Why would Nate Silver? Well, he's just Hillary Clinton has this in the bag, and he says that there's a 10% chance she might not win. What's wrong with him? Ask your friends to define fake news.
You can't.
Define fake news for me, Greg.
It's like fair. Can't be done. Everything is as a matter of perspective, even the hardcore facts. Like on 9/11, we specifically know that two planes hit the World Trade Center. Unless you are on certain subreddits. That, in the United States, the media released the facts, and the interpretation, the takeaway, was that it was an act of war by an enemy we didn't have any idea we were at war with.
Right.
On Al Jazeera, or in Al Arabiya, it was retribution for years of foreign intervention at the hands of the CIA and overthrowing democratically elected leaders.
Yes.
Those are the facts. That's what happened. But the takeaway from the facts, the truth to the facts, are entirely audience-driven. There cannot be fake news without context.
They hate us for our freedom.
We're going to go invade Iraq because no Iraqis were on those planes.
The truth,
John Bolton fed false evidence up the chain and convinced people that didn't critically think.
This is the problem with our society, the stupid binary. Two things can be true simultaneously. It can be true that it is bad that we were attacked on 9/11. And it can also be true that the attackers were motivated because of our foreign policy. And it doesn't make you un-American to believe in both.
No.
Right.
And it doesn't make one less true or untrue. You know, it's... I will never call Alex Jones a conspiracy theorist again.
No.
Or Chris Galt or any of these people. Because you know what I have been doing for 10 years now by doing that? I have been, instead of engaging with people like Chris Galt on fluoride, for instance, instead of listening to what he has to say about the subject and evaluating his facts with an honest and open mind, I don't want to have the critical thinking skills or the respect for Chris Galt to hear his opinion on the issue just because it's outside of the mainstream. It is a marginalization of people like Chris Galt, somebody that I like and respect, and I shouldn't have done it, and I shouldn't have told people not to listen to Alex Jones. People should listen to Alex Jones. I have listened to Alex Jones literally every day since the election because I want to understand what he's saying. And you know what? 25% of it is valuable information and insight that is an interesting takeaway.
Yeah, you are exposed to something you hadn't considered.
25% of it is crazy bullshit that I don't believe. And 50% of it is showmanship, selling vitamins, and self-promotion.
Yeah. Because a lot of his show, like reason why a lot of up and coming libertarians do listen to Alex Jones or stuff like that is because you don't get a lot of anti-government talk in most talk radio.
No,
you don't. Or he actually will bring up like past like foreign policy and stuff. Like the only
history,
the history basically. Yeah, like a lot of the stuff you talked about the CIA. Like I remember when 9/11 happened, and I was like, it can't be just for freedom. It can't be something so simple. And that's how I found Alex Jones. Was like, there's got to be something more to this. There's something I haven't been taught. There's something I haven't been, you know, no one brought to my attention. And those type of news outlets. We'll talk about it. Now, granted, it's that slave speak that you do that you try to put someone off as like, oh, I'm not going to listen to them because they're a conspiracy theorist.
They're fake news. Yeah. So I'm not going to engage my brain in their. You know what happened? In one weekend, I watched Alex Jones's Invisible Empire, a documentary about globalization and the New World Order and all that stuff. Very interesting.
The Khazars.
Then I went to the other end and I watched Noam Chomsky's Requiem for the American Dream on Netflix. And I also watched Oliver Stone's, based on a recommendation from one of our listeners, Oliver Stone's Untold History of the United States on Netflix. Noam and Oliver are kind of on the same spectrum on the left with Michael Moore and Alex Jones on the right. The information was almost all exactly the same.
Yeah.
But Noam and Oliver will tell you not to listen to Alex because he's crazy, and
just look at
vice
the Piers
versa.
Morgan clip. He's not a serious person. You know, like that's the dismissive arrogance, you know, even though they're both citing the same sources and reaching creating narratives around it.
It was kind of funny on The View, though.
I have been watching because
Woke is great.
Because I have been listening, I have then seen on CNN clips that I had heard in the original broadcast. And it is people who are taking, this happens all the time in radio. It's because it's why the radio industry, the broadcast industry is very paranoid about podcasting because a broadcaster can then get a podcast and say whatever he wants. Let's say he goes on a pro or anti-abortion rant and he uses the C word 100 times. Then the competition can then cut that up, send it to the FCC, and they've got a, you know, this was aired on their blah, blah, blah. Well, they have to take resources to fight that then.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's what's happening.
Yeah.
They're taking things out of context that he says, just like what they did to Glenn Beck when he was at Fox News. You know,
every conservative talk radio host.
Everybody. Everybody. And it has happened.
Sandra Fluck?
It has happened to us. And it will happen more and more as we continue to grow. Like, it's a marginalization instead of listening to what somebody has to say and then dealing with their opinions and having a conversation about what they believe, which was one of the tenets of this show. And so I'm not ashamed to admit that I have listened to Alex Jones. It's entertaining. And, you know, like when he has Roger Stone on, I find that interesting because that's the only guy watching the circus. That's the only dude that saw how the election was going to turn out. And, like, he's supposedly crazy, too, because he believes...
He was the ultimate establishment man at one point in his
absolutely.
Life.
Absolutely.
No, he has Richard freaking Nixon tattooed on his back.
Right. So...
Life, like, the entire back.
Oh,
yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, like, so, he's so woke.
Yeah. So...
Nixon woke.
I just... I'm disappointed because for so long, what happened to me with this election is all the rules that I thought were in place, and all the people that I listened to were wrong, and they completely missed this election, and there was this whole gulf of information out there that I had never engaged with, and because I had dismissed it, and called it fake news. It's not news. Like, what Alex Jones does is just he has people sitting there. He does what everybody else does. He does what Glenn Beck does. He does what the Huffington Post does. He has a team of people sitting there and writing up an article based around their worldview and then linking to other articles that point to that worldview being correct.
Yeah, they sell to their target audience and look to turn eyeballs into dollars.
It's what we would do if we had more resources and time and money.
That's what I mean. That's the nature of news.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what news is now.
Especially if you got to go daily or you have to go
hourly, minute.
Yeah, hourly by the minute, you have to fill that air time. You have to fill.
So I am completely maddened by the complete acceptance by the mainstream media and by the left and Democratic politicians of a simple phrase of something that cannot be proven when they were our allies on the libertarian side against the Iraq war, questioning. They had more proof that there was yellow cake in Iraq than Russia hacked the... What they are essentially saying is that the Russians...
Because they used computers, it is very likely that the Russians are the source of the hacking.
Exactly.
The Russians have computers.
Yeah, therefore, this hacker had a computer, you know. Mm-hmm. It's like because, mm-hmm. you know, all rectangles are squares, but not all squares are rectangles.
Right. Yep. And it's
and
just...
the most ridiculous part is, like, this guy's supposed to be, like, this team is supposed to be the best hackers in the world. And they work for the Russian state government? That does not sound lucrative.
I guess I shouldn't be surprised, because as we've told you, the entire run of We Are Libertarians and the Shill Report, look in the feed in the past as we've examined the media, talked about how it works, as we've talked about since the election, the goal of a Politico, The Hill, NBC News, the Sunday talk shows, Sleepy Eyes Chuck Todd, and even CNN and Jake Tapper, whom I respect and love, Glenn Thrush is somebody I enjoy his podcast and I respect that he is a good reporter. But you know what I figured out since the election? Being a good reporter and being respected by his peers really just meant that he was having conversations with John Podesta calling himself a hack, and he has a close relationship with power, and therefore they give him information.
Right.
And so
he's a trusted outlet to leak and craft the narrative.
Because they can trust that he is going to not make them look stupid. Mm-hmm. And he is not going to question their power and their authority. And
he's a good boy.
That doesn't make you a journalist.
No.
Michael Hastings was a journalist. A man that was that wrote about the removal. He wrote on BuzzFeed, actually. So Michael Hastings was a reporter that we've talked about on this program in the past in 2013 after his death. Where his car was out of control speeding and then crashed because people accelerate when they're heading towards a tree. And he...
Only in a DeLorean if you know that you're going to 1985.
Sure.
You got to get up to 88 miles per hour. Yep.
Richard Clark, the former head of National Security Agency, said, I think that the American security agencies took control of his car and killed him, probably the CIA. So what Michael Hastings wrote in 2012... when we repealed a law against propaganda being used in the United States by the United States government, he had quotes from congressmen saying, this is not a good idea. The CIA will now start using propaganda in the United States. Mm-hmm. Michael Hastings got killed. Isn't that weird? And we explained this to Gina, and Gina goes, oh, yeah, we killed him. The United States government killed him. And even you and I, who are not conspiracy theorists, go, yeah, this guy probably got killed by the Americans.
Oh, yeah.
There's just, if you look at the evidence around it.
The Clintons have a hit list that's, I mean, incredible. You know, talking about 33 deaths by people that have come up and worked with them on various...
But isn't that a conspiracy?
Didn't they also kill Paul Walker, too?
What?
Yeah, it was a Kill Paul Walker too, no. And they died the same way.
But isn't that a conspiracy that they've killed people, Greg?
I mean, is it that they actually did? I don't believe Hillary and Bill pulled the trigger. So, like, maybe, yeah, like, that's the thing. But any, you know, there is clearly a, it's a work hazard, work-life hazard by being affiliated with the Clintons and put into roles where you're trusted with a lot of information.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, the thing about, like, Seth Rich was a, what, 26-year-old Clinton staffer?
Yeah.
And he was accused of being the leak.
He was the one who everybody kind of said, this is the guy who leaked the DNC information, you know, that two
weeks. Well, that's the thing is, like, that's the, like, it was definitely two disillusioned DNC people that had just had it with whistleblowing.
Right.
You know, they got the same treatment Snowden did. They were completely frustrated and done. And, I mean, you look at, this is pure, it's odd that the head of the former CEO of the Clinton Global Initiative has disappeared.
Mm-hmm.
Is that fake news?
No.
I'd love to be able to point to him and tell you that he's real.
Right.
Or that he still exists, or we know where he is, or what's going on in his life. We can't. Braverman is gone.
Right.
That isn't fake news. Unless he just didn't tell anybody and he went off in the wilderness like Muhammad or Jesus for a while and is going to come back and save us. But, I mean, I don't know. Like, there are just things about, there are dark underbellies of all governments.
Yeah.
The CIA is basically a internal, its intentions were to create a covert intelligence network that allowed the United States to anticipate being manipulated, anticipate enemies, and what it ended up doing is creating the kind of intelligence, a offline prism that allowed it to influence and shape the course of the world outside the realm of political repercussion.
Yeah.
And the danger is what they haven't anticipated is by becoming political, the CIA now faces public backlash in a way it never has. I don't know if you watched the polling data, but Gallup and Pew released their findings about whether the American people care about the Russian hacking.
60% say they don't give a shit.
None. They loved Kanye and Trump.
Also, 70% said that they think Hillary Clinton should go to jail.
Yeah.
That's true.
They think that she should not be pardoned.
Yeah. I mean, the only thing about doing it, you know, that's a political decision. If there were any justice, Hillary Clinton would be in jail.
Right.
No doubt about it. She committed an act of treason. She directly okayed the selling of arms and supplying of arms to someone that violate the Logan Act. They are going to be probably a future enemy. You know, Al-Qaeda is an enemy. And, you know, since we gave those weapons to rebels that are basically mercenaries that ally whoever the highest bidder is that week, those people have, I'm sure, at some point become our ally, and she committed an act of treason by violating the Logan Act and okaying it as Secretary of State. Right. She also used a pay-for-play scheme. And the FBI and the New York field office has been ordered to go ahead and continue their investigation of the Clinton Global Initiative.
Good. Yeah.
You go down that hole, you're going to find a level of corruption that is enormous.
Yeah.
And it's eventually going to stop because there's a lot of people at the top of that snake that knows where the bodies are buried, and it's going to stop. Kings don't kill kings.
Well, here's
the outsider does.
Yeah.
And that's why Trump is so dangerous.
Correct. And that's like when he got elected and then when he talked about how the CIA, when you're like, you know, they started going after him. It's, you know, it's almost par for the course. It's like, wow, you can almost read it and watch it happen in real time. Watch them all freak out. Like when Trump had the press conference with all the with the press corps talking about that off the record meeting they were supposed to have. It was supposed to be off the record.
The entire New York Times editorial board
and they talked about it because of how he was because they expected how this was going to be, and he just berated them.
Yeah. He's doing nothing. He's not appointing insiders to his cabinet.
No.
He's not appointing the Council on Foreign Relations and Brookings Institute and Rand Institute people that have always been appointed.
He's brilliantly leaking. That's who he's considering to create outrage and then sliding in anyone that looks less extreme than them over and over.
Yeah.
It's a brilliant manipulation tactic.
The Rumsfeld crowd, the Jim Baker crowd, has not been a part of the discussion. The people who, you know, George H.W. Bush was the ultimate insider, the head of the CIA. His dad, Prescott Bush, was an early proponent of the CIA.
The CIA recruits almost exclusively out of very elite private institutions with secret societies and fraternities that have been trusted as, you know, vetting grounds for a very long time. you know, it wasn't until it became modernized and then really once it, after Iran, Carter, and by appointing Stansfield Turner as the head of it, they went through a systemic elimination of a lot of people who weren't bad agents, but because they were one generation too close to the language they were going to need to speak, mm-hmm. were cut out to in order to scale back the size and scope of the CIA. But it has stormed back in a way with the arrival of digital technology that is, it makes it an all-powerful organization.
Absolutely. So the CIA was started under Truman, and it came out of World War II. And Truman really was... So the CIA, there's a documentary called Conspiracy, because I've just been diving into all these conspiracies. Like, okay.
You've been red-pilling hard.
I've been red-pilling hard. And so...
Which Red Pill is a good movie.
So, like, I'm just kind of like going, all right, am I a crazy conspiracy theorist now? Because when you connect all these dots from a bunch of different points of view, you go, that's a pretty interesting theory.
Yeah.
And there was a guy who was the head of the German Nazi intelligence division. And I wish I could remember his name, but this was a BBC documentary called Conspiracy, and it was talking about a bunch of conspiracies. And, like, the BBC basically just said, like, no, here's all the facts. This is all true. Mm-hmm. And, like, oh, here's these conspiracies. You know, and it's not like... you know, the fluoride's put in for mind control. It's not stuff like that. It's like, here's this German officer that the Americans brought over. The Americans and the British said, okay.
Teach me.
They have this Nazi. And this Nazi officer was in charge of intelligence for the Russians.
Was it Mossberg?
I don't remember. And so he was in head of intelligence for the Russians. And it was well known that, like, Churchill had a great distrust of Stalin and the Russians. FDR didn't have the same level of distrust that that Churchill did. But then when FDR died, Truman came into office, and Truman was very anti-Stalin, very anti-Russian. And he almost amended the facts to see what he wanted to see. And in his first meeting with Stalin, bragged about how he really let Stalin have it. You know, and Stalin walked away just being really pissed. And, like, the Russians at that point, Stalin was in a lot of ways in the talks. Like, what was the D city where they had? It was right after, it was Truman, Churchill, and Stalin right after VE Day, and Truman was trying to get the Russians into Japan while berating the Russians and telling them that they're an awful ally and all this stuff. And Stalin was just kind of playing nice because Stalin really wanted to eventually be part of the aid. He wanted pieces of territory. And he also knew that the Americans were going to, you know, the Marshall Plan was on the horizon. And we never ended up giving the Russians any piece of the Marshall Plan because of Truman, because Truman was decidedly anti-Russian. And so they took... This Nazi kept all of the Russian intelligence, essentially, and knew that he could be valuable, and he was. And so what he did is he basically spun the Russians as the next great threat because he was very anti-communist, and he hated the Russians. And the CIA, the Dulles brothers at the time, and Truman and Churchill bought it. And this conspiracy documentary was basically saying, like, he's sort of the guy responsible for the Cold War because, you know, here's this Nazi intelligence officer.
He planted the seed of
who
doubt.
Has planted the seed that, you know, he played to their confirmation bias to not get killed. The dude was never at Nuremberg. He lived a pretty good life. And he was part of Operation Paperclip, all these Nazi people that we brought back to America to be part of the Manhattan Project, to be part of our rocket program.
Oppenheimer,
to be part of our medical... apparatus, to be part of our intelligence agencies. And that was so loud in these new mics. So yeah, but and so when you watch, like, this documentary, and it almost is all the same exact information in the Oliver Stone documentary, because the Oliver Stone documentary is very decidedly anti-Truman, And, you know, Truman was ousted for this, like, liberal labor champion that this guy, Alan Wallace, who was the vice president that FDR loved. And, like, you can tell that Oliver Stone really liked this guy and wanted him to be the guy that succeeded FDR. But it was Truman. And Truman was a bumbling idiot who got us into the Cold War, and then Dwight Eisenhower just let the Dulles brothers do whatever they wanted. Well, along comes JFK. Now, we know Oliver Stone is one of those conspiracy theorists, and so the Bay of Pigs happens, and then the Cuban Missile Crisis happens, and all of his chiefs of staff and the military-industrial complex and the CIA all really is ready to go all in on war with Russia. Like, the Joint Chief of Staff during this Cuban Missile Crisis, which, if you don't know what that is, the Russians basically, we had put ballistic missiles into Ukraine, and we had put basically nuclear weapons into Ukraine, and the Russians, I don't know why, but they didn't like that. And so the CIA had put these
nuclear weapons. You have nothing to worry about. The gun is only at the back of your head. If you don't do anything wrong, you have nothing to fear. Why would you want to put a gun at my head?
Right. And so Khrushchev and the Soviet Union, actually, it was during the Eisenhower administration when Castro came and met with Richard Nixon in New York City, and Nixon blew him off, and the Eisenhower administration blew him off. So Castro went to Russia and started cutting deals with Khrushchev and the Soviet Union and became, you know, a Soviet state, essentially. And they put...
It's their Alaska.
Right. And so they started, you know... They started putting missiles in Cuba and 90 miles from our shore, and America freaked out. The free world freaked out at this act of aggression.
I mean, you're talking about, like, my parent, or, like, you know, our parents' generation. They would go and have alarms, and you would go and they'd tell you to get under your desk, which is hilarious. Lewis Black has a great bit about that.
It's
nuclear war, and you want kindling on my head while I kiss my ass literally goodbye.
So there's this ship that, as the missiles were coming in, there were submarines that were accompanying the ships, and American boats started bombing, and they didn't know that they were hitting the submarine, and the submarine thought they were without communication, and they thought that
they were silent.
They thought that World War III had started taking place, and the commander didn't want to be the
instigator.
He didn't want to be the only commander that didn't fire. And so he was about to fire, and it was this one officer who talked him out of firing, and they ended up getting saved and finding out what happened. And it was like October 27th, 1963, that he would have hit Washington, D.C. and started World War III and a nuclear holocaust that killed like 600,000 people. Like, this one guy is one of those unsung heroes that saved its civilization, because it got that close and it got so tense, and Khrushchev didn't want nuclear war because he didn't want to be responsible for the death of 500,000 to 600,000 people across, you know, maybe a million, 600 million people. And so he sent a secret telegram to Kennedy, and the two of them agreed to stand down. And so our ambassador, actually it was Robert F. Kennedy, went and met with the Russian ambassador and said, "Hey, not for nothing. If you do this, we're going to invade Cuba and have a full-scale war. Oh, also wanted to let you know that the technology on those rockets in Ukraine, we're not going to be upgrading those rockets, and they're scheduled to be recalled at some point, but we refuse to remove those rockets." And the message was very clear, like, we're not invading Cuba, we're removing our, let's stand down. And so Khrushchev eventually, within the next year, was removed, and was the big bear dude that came in after him. Not
Nikita
Yeltsin.
Khrushchev.
It was Khrushchev, and then it was I forget his name. He's more of a hardliner, and he came in, and he was the one that initially fought with Reagan, and then, you know,
Gorbachev
came in after this guy. Brezhnev.
Brezhnev.
Brezhnev. And so because Khrushchev didn't take the hard line, the Communist Party replaced him. And when he died in 1971, he was buried with like this paltry little stone, and a monument was eventually put up to him. But it was really Kennedy and Khrushchev who both were hours, minutes away from nuking the entire world. Because you have to realize in 1963, nuclear weapons weren't even 20 years. They weren't even 20 years old at that point. Mm-hmm. And it's a terrifying new reality. Like, you have to think.
And they weren't so world ending yet.
Sure. Like, as libertarians, you think about how we felt when we first saw, like, the Snowden apparatus.
Prism, yeah.
When we first saw Prism and we realized, like, how, man, they're really all over us. They're really watching everything we do, and how terrifying that was. It freaks you out. But this is the end of humanity. So
do not pass code. Do not collect right. $300.
And so Kennedy got to a place where he realized what, like, the missile gap that was a huge part of the 60s debate. I mean, it was like 1,000 to 100. Like, we had 1,000 nuclear weapons and they had 100. They didn't have anywhere near the capability. But the American press, the American defense apparatus made it seem like war was imminent and that we would all be annihilated and that we would lose. And so we need to beef up our... And it's been this way since the end of World War II. Mm-hmm. The defense contractors that made so much money in World War II never shut down. We never rolled that back. And so they have continually found reasons to beef that up.
Like the F-35.
Right. And so we're now...
Such a terrible point.
We're now at a point where terrorism is at such a lone wolf state that... It really isn't a reason for us to have a great military-industrial complex in the way that we once
had. To fight
had.
Islamic terrorism, that will not do you any good.
Right.
Yeah.
Well, gee, golly, a war with Russia sure would, wouldn't it? So I just look at this, and so to finish the story about Kennedy said, this is getting ridiculous. You people, my Joint Chiefs of Staff, are ridiculous. The Dulles brothers, you're ridiculous. He fires Alan Dulles, the head of the CIA, and signals that he's intending to close it down. Because he looked at what had happened in Cuba, he looked at what happened in Iran, he looked at what happened in several other countries, and said, this just isn't going to work. He was dead within several months, and who was appointed to the commission, to the Warren Commission, to investigate his death? Alan Dulles. Who hated Kennedy. You know, when you look at the life of Martin Luther King like I did this summer, I was always Oswald shot the gun. I was always a single shooter guy. There was nobody on the Knoll. I was always, yeah, James Earl Ray killed Martin Luther King, duh. You know, Sirhan Sirhan killed Robert F. Kennedy. When you really start to like look at all this stuff and put all this history together, Martin Luther King was the only person in American history that was not in a position of official government authority that could have led a revolution on the United States. He was an existential threat in the eyes of the FBI and the CIA. He didn't live. He got killed by a guy who swears up and down that he didn't do it.
As all people who do it usually do.
Sure. No, that's not true. Somebody like a Lee Harvey Oswald... A devout Soviet takes credit for it and says, yes, I'm proud I did that. Lee Harvey Oswald denied it up and down. He said he never did it.
Yeah. I mean,
James Earl Ray, if you look at the math, it's impossible for him to have killed him, to have killed Martin Luther King. Sirhan Sirhan, why the fuck would he kill Robert Kennedy? What did he have against him? So I just look at this and I look at people who are in positions of authority who have opposed the CIA in our history, and it doesn't go well for them. So please keep Donald Trump in your prayers, that's for sure. So I'm already telling you, Greg, I don't believe the official story.
On
Donald Trump if he gets assassinated. 100% I'm going to be a conspiracy theorist on it if that were to happen. And God forbid it does. I'm not saying that I want that. I think that It is just a weird coincidence that anybody that really significantly, a journalist, a political figure that goes after the CIA, it doesn't go well for them.
I mean, Edward Snowden trusts Vladimir Putin more than he trusts the United States government. That should tell you a lot about who's actually to fear.
Yep.
You know, to me, that's
it's not really that he like he trusts Putin. He's kind of stuck there.
He's stuck there.
He's just stuck there.
But I'm the show pony that is the thorn in the side both of our enemies.
Correct.
It's the same as in the 60s. Like, telling us that we should fear the Russians is ridiculous. It's like telling a tiger to fear a fly.
Right. I mean, they just dropped out of the top five globally in defense spending. They're an older country. They're battling drug addiction and alcoholism and gambling.
Yeah.
And like crocodile.
Yeah.
If you go listen to my interview with Heather Black, who lives in Russia, you know, we interviewed Heather, who lives in Russia, and she talked about the election. She talked about Trump. She talked about Putin. And she's just like, yeah, we have people that oppose Putin here.
Yeah.
Yeah, we didn't really focus on the American election. Yeah, people here, the populace kind of wanted Hillary Clinton to win because they didn't think Donald Trump. No, we didn't. We don't. Like, they aren't thinking about us. They're not. So I should get together with Heather. So
we create this echo. Even nationally, we create. It happens in libertarian circles all the time. We are so sure that everybody's watching, and it's more so we're afraid they're not. So we don't ever consider that no one actually cares and is paying attention. And so that's the same thing we do with the American media. You know, it's that. We are the world's greatest country, and the world waits on our move.
Yeah.
Correct, yeah. We got a good, the whole world got a good view of what inside Russia during the Winter Olympics.
Sochi.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Everyone he did not this. Look like Hitler.
It's corrupt and ineffective.
Right.
It's a corrupt state. You know, the Sochi, the road, what was the documentary that I just watched on Netflix? It's called Putin Hidden Treasures. And it basically is a French documentary that outlines all of the corruption that takes place in Russia. And the stretch of road from, you know, to Sochi was like the most expensive road in history because all of this money basically goes back to Putin and it's all hidden. And he takes this modest salary and he's just, I'm a man of the people, but he's really probably the richest man in the world.
Yeah, he's he is definitely. I mean, you got to think about it. He purposely manipulated the power structure by making his friends rich. He bought, you know, everyone's complicitness.
Yeah.
And that's what you do. You know, there, if you've ever seen The Wolf of Wall Street, they were his rat holes or the people that held, you know, stock really on behalf of him. But in exchange, they got billionaire status through the privatization of state sponsored entities during his reforms. And he knew what he was doing. If you look at the difference in economic climate between when he took office and where they are now, I mean, they have a minimum income. They have a guaranteed minimum income. They have a 13% flat tax rate. Mm-hmm. The only thing that's really rough about the Russian economy is that it's heavily it's got the resource curse. They're heavily dependent on the petrodollar. Mm-hmm. You know, they run deficits when oil is cheap.
Right.
So right now, they hate Saudi Arabia. Why do you think they're so adamant about propping up a Shia regime in Assad?
Yeah, they're not there to fight ISIS. They're there to defeat.
Yeah, they're there because their monopoly on supplying natural gas and oil to the Europe, their largest customer, was threatened by a new Sunni-backed pipeline if regime change happened, and their economy was already on the brink because Saudi Arabia has been flooding the oil markets purposely to keep U.S. out of expanding production by keeping private investment dollars from going and funding new operations.
And destroying Venezuela.
Right. Venezuela. And, you know, that's what's funny is, like, we talk about this, and, you know, the testing ground for neoconservatism and spreading, quote-unquote, democracy, you know, by being expansionist with Western liberalism and democracy, the testing ground was in Venezuela at the hands of Nelson Rockefeller when he went down, their company, the oil company, had entered into an extremely lucrative oil contract with the Venezuelan government. He goes down there and is able to, through internal politics, get himself appointed to the board. There's a populist uprising, a new election. The new head of Venezuela, the new president, demands a tenfold increase in the per gallon royalties and also says that we will charge you a one-time upfront fee of 10% of GDP. That takes their highest performing asset within Rockefeller's private company, oil company, and turns it into basically a turd. He's livid because he realizes that by the old terms, he can continue being wealthy and have huge influence in South America. What's happening simultaneously is the movie The Motorcycle Diaries. Che Guevara is going around seeing the rural poor of South America and misinterpreting it as, you know, American imperialism exploiting people and holding them down, and starts reading about communism, and he starts inciting revolution among the workers of South Latin America and rural areas across all the countries. So you get a nationalist, populist vibe and uprising that ended up turning into, you know, Che and Fidel Castro and the arrival of that. The United States saw that coming. Rockefeller experienced it because he realized that his investment was worthless, his top performing asset was worthless. So he comes back as Secretary of State, and they come up with the idea of the land grant program. The land grant program, in coordination with the creation of the 4-H, was designed to take and prop up Latin American dictators like Pinochet and those types, but way earlier, and they would enforce private property rights and grant land to rural urban or to rural young males to farm the land, and then they could have their own property to make money off of rather than being beholden to government handouts. The idea was to stop communism from spreading, coming up through South America like was happening with Che and Fidel, and then a coordination with the Russians. This all started at the North New Mexico School of the Mines. It's been well documented, well written about. CIA was in charge of instituting the coups in order to get a more right-wing private property-leaning dictator in place. We then would recruit the best and the brightest from down in the South American countries. Actually, my brother-in-law's dad was one, and so that's why I looked into this. And so he worked with the 4-H as a liaison, Department of Agriculture, and the Paraguayan government. And they went, and he got a scholarship to the now what's now New Mexico State University, the first land-grant university in the United States. It was a test program. He would go and teach them with the help of 4-H on how to farm their property, self-subsistence farming that would, you know, quiet people from demanding food to be able to live in these countries that were being exploited. And that was the testing ground for neoconservatism at the hands of the CIA, a bunch of New England, Yale liberals that ended up becoming and morphing into neoconservatives because of the success they had in stopping the spread of communism in South American countries by enforcing private property rights, bringing young, poor rural males to the United States to study under the land grant program, and sending them back to South America. Mm-hmm. All in coordination with the Secretary of State, CIA, 4-H, which Jeremiah Morrill's in on it. It's an inside job. And that is how that was our testing ground for neoconservatism for the Middle East.
Have you ever read Confessions of an Economic Hitman?
Yeah, by John Perkins. And that was just a continuation of it.
Right. And so basically the IMF and the World Bank, they are part of this globalist conspiracy to take over. I mean, so what happens is a country like Nigeria, which is oil rich but has a disastrous government, what they will do is the World Bank will make a loan, or the IMF, the International Monetary Fund, will make a loan to a country like Nigeria at the amount that Nigeria will never be able to pay it back as a country.
Right.
And so
they justify it by saying, like, if you invest this, we'll lend it to you.
Right.
In exchange, your economy will grow at X%, and that's why it'll be so easy to pay it back and compound, knowing that the Bain consultants they used, which is where he worked, which is like Booz Allen, like where Snowden worked as a contractor, they were actually using false projections. In order that they knew they wouldn't pay him back, but then they could get geopolitical concessions.
Right, because what happens when they can't pay back this massive loan from Bain Capital, the IMF, the World Bank, they then say to them, well, you don't have to pay us back, but what you do need to do is you need to take your resource, uranium, some iron ore, oil,
port access, really whatever.
Port access, whatever is the
worst case scenario, a military base that we lease for nothing.
A military base that the Americans get in these countries, or some other Western power, they get a military base, and then an American company like Exxon or Shell or Mobil Oil or whatever will move in, and they get the rights to those resources. and the country loses the rights to their resource, and a Western company gets it. It's basically neocolonialism. Mm-hmm. We have colonialism going on at the hands of the IMF, the World Bank, the CIA, and the major global corporations that run the world, as Adam Smith called them, the masters of the universe. Mankind.
Yeah.
So you have... you wonder why the third world hates our guts. It's not because they hate our freedom. It's because our corporations and our country, our corporations enslave them, and then our country overthrows their government to make sure that we keep a favorable government. And then if you get somebody like a Hugo Chavez, who is, let's say,
Duarte. He's like Rodrigo Duarte.
Duarte, a populist in that country, then they just kill him. They assassinate him. And they have a coup. And they make it look like it was part of the country happening inside. Their goal is to run propaganda for various elements.
It's like astroturfing here, like with the whole the defected electors. You know, it's this fomenting through private organizations, PACs, really.
Right.
You know, with that money to foment discontent with staged discontent,
right,
hoping that it will catch on and turn into real fervor, and the United States will hand pick the successor, like in Venezuela, it was a Harvard educated mayor in Caracas,
right,
that we wanted to overthrow the existing regime right now in Venezuela, and that person becomes the leader of the movement. They're the new man of the people, completely beholden to the United States,
right,
and it's rinse and repeat. And you know, whenever they start getting a little uppity and demanding appropriate compensation rather than concessions.
Right. And so, like, what's happening right now, Alexandria Pelosi is the daughter of Nancy Pelosi.
Yeah.
And she has all this PAC money. Again, another PAC that...
It's Soros-funded, the money is.
Right. Yeah. Soros funded the fake, phony organization that's claiming what is and what is not fake news as well. Soros is one of the most...
Vladimir Putin issued an arrest warrant for him, international.
Good. George Soros is one of the most destructive human beings on the planet.
Yeah.
He damn near enslaved all of Britain, and how they haven't had their intelligence services take this guy out, I have no idea, because he is one of the most evil men alive. You know, and they try to make the Koch brothers the Soros of the right, but this dude is about overthrowing markets and company and countries so he can then short those countries and make money off of them.
And at this point, it's just purely in society is an ideological experiment in socialism for him. Like he's so rich, and the daily interest he makes, he'll never, like, he literally can do whatever he wants. And so this has far surpassed anything like financial profit. It is at the point where he wants society to be a testing ground for the writings of like Trotsky and Fabian socialism.
Yeah.
Can society make this leap and get beyond personal self-interest?
So somebody like an Alexandria Pelosi, they get funding, they start a PAC, they start pressuring. I mean, can you imagine what pressure electors are under?
A guy at the University of Arizona, a Republican elector, said that he's gotten over 50,000 emails since the day after the election, and he was, he just got one, said, "I hope you swallow a bullet." Someone on campus told him that, you know, "I'm going to put a bullet in your head" on Twitter.
Electors are public record. I think we talked about this in one of the past episodes, but I was an elector in 2012. If Gary Johnson won Indiana, then I would have cast my ballot for Gary Johnson, and our state would have voted for him. Do electors actually go someplace and vote, or is it all by mail at this point?
I believe they actually go to Washington, D.C., to the Electoral College, and the vice president... It's Gore, Nixon, and Humphrey all had the vice president oversees it.
Mm-hmm.
After there are two people from the House and two people from the Senate that go and read the results and confirm it. It is in person. I'm pretty almost 100% sure.
So it is public record. If you're an elector, then your record is made known. And so these guys are getting an unbelievable amount of pressure. Because it's on Monday, the vote is on Monday, and that's where this becomes so sinister, is that this whole Russian fake news stuff that...
With no concrete evidence, you can say this is what happened.
Right. You cannot say...
Unless the CIA is keeping that private and you know, they're not going to reveal it because it's top secret classified and the president would have to release it.
So it started with fake news.
Leak it.
It started with fake news. And then about Sunday, I realized, like, no, this is about overthrowing the Electoral College.
Mm-hmm.
And Alexander Pelosi demanded that every elector gets a CIA briefing on exactly what Russia did so then they can vote their conscience and overturn the vote. And you said it can be overruled by the House.
Well, that's the thing. So it ends up being certified, right? And right now, Lawrence Lessig, a professor at Harvard, said there are 30, and they need 36 to flip the result, that he's got 30 who are interested in doing it. But the reality is they're by party, and the Republicans control 39 of 50 state legislatures. Colorado came out and said that they would charge any defected elector with perjury because of what they've done before as an officer of the state. And of the Republican, of the Republicans, there's only one Republican that is going to defect. And so they'd have to get out of the one, they'd have to get an additional X amount out of 169 who have all said that they are sworn. So there is no actual controversy.
Right.
The state GOPs have went around and done, the RNCs had the House whip go around and count these things and vet this. And there is only one in Texas that, you know, is considering affecting, and that's happened before. Like, there was a vote instead of
John Hospers, instead of Nixon in 72.
And then someone inadvertently voted for John Edwards instead of Barack Obama.
Right.
I mean, so, like, you know, there are inadvertent ones, but, like, this isn't a real scandal. And the House has the ability to certify the actual results of the Electoral College rather than accepting the defectors.
Right. So, again, it's all phony baloney, fake outrage, and it's just a manufactured crisis. Nothing is actually going to change, but it is about driving down public opinion of Donald Trump's legitimacy as president at this point.
He has the most appointments in the history of U.S. presidents at this step in his transition.
Yeah, he's incredibly effective.
It's like that. That's the thing, is there is no honeymoon period where he, you know, let's see how this is. It is immediate tar and feather.
Doesn't it feel like he's already president? Like he's already controlling the narrative. Like it's people are sitting here going, well, what do you think about this? Blah, blah, blah. It's like, no, Obama's still president.
Yeah. I mean, he's theoretically still president.
Yeah.
Like,
but, you know,
theoretically,
you know, world leaders are meeting with Trump and, you know, President Obama came in with such promise in so many areas and lacked the cult of personality and the toughness and willingness to get dirty to actually carry out the reforms he claimed to support.
Right.
Donald Trump has no problem getting as dirty and as ugly as you want to go.
Yep.
And that frames or that shapes negotiations in a way you just can't imagine how beneficial that is. Because there's a really good chance, you know, like with the Cuban Missile Crisis, it would have been something like, I'm just going to park a nuke, you know, at the Bay of Pigs.
Yeah.
With a timer. It'll be a fake timer, but it'll just sit there.
Right.
And we're going to literally have everything be a hostage situation.
Well, that's one of the reasons that Kennedy was unpredictable for his
worldview was untested.
Yeah. Well, right. But his security council didn't know which way he would fall. I mean, he was truly an independent thinker in that way. And Trump he mimics that. He is somebody who is not beholden to, you know, George W. Bush was going to do whatever Cheney and Rumsfeld and Brzezinski and James Baker and his dad and whatever they wanted. Like he wasn't a puppet president, but he certainly was part of that worldview and shaped by it and was never going to go too far out of the
orthodox,
the Henry Kissinger realm.
Yeah.
You know, Donald Trump is somebody who is he just put the head of an oil company in charge of the Secretary of State. He put Rick Perry in charge of an agency that he couldn't remember 4 years ago.
And one shut down, which is awesome because this is all he's got left. He put his brand on the line. His brand is permanently tarnished. The liberals are going to make sure they're going to do their best to try to tarnish that brand for 4 years. He shut down all negotiations since he was became president-elect. So he's not doing any business deals.
No new undertakings.
He's trying to make sure to separate himself. And the liberal media is doing, well, all media is trying to basically try to make it look like, no, this is not good enough. This is never good enough.
That's his one weakness. His one Achilles heel is that his business is based off of a personal brand.
Correct. Yeah.
That is the one thing you can exploit, just like with a talk radio host, you can exploit the advertisers. That's their Achilles heel you can put pressure on.
Yeah, the drones flying over.
Oh, there's a helicopter right outside my apartment right now.
Oh, and the FEMA camp's just up the road.
I have to edit out that part where I said the CIA is going to try and kill Trump.
Yeah.
No, they won't try to kill Trump.
Oh, no.
No, they. I mean, if they wanted to, they would have never done this, taken this public-facing role.
Right.
If they wanted to kill Trump, you'd have never seen it coming.
Right.
They'd never been suspected, and they'd had the perfect patsy. By becoming a political organization and not being able to resist the bait, they have neutered themselves.
Yeah.
Because now the public spotlight's on them.
60% of the media doesn't trust them.
And he gets free license because anytime there's something controversial that the Democrats are going to hate, he's going to walk Kanye in and they'll fist pump each other.
Yeah.
And the media won't be able to stop themselves from selling that rather than,
right.
Well, we might have just, you know, undermined democracy today, or, you know, there might have been a white supremacist just appointed the Supreme Court. You know, but that isn't a worry. Like, the people he's vetting are libertarian, or, like, you know, there was a great article, who was it? It was a takedown piece by the Washington Post about how he's appointing all these delusional adherents to Ayn Rand. And, like Trump said before, his favorite fictional character is Howard Roark. Makes sense. Developer in New York City. And then, or, you know, what I mean? Like, same with Tillerson. Tillerson's a Ayn Rand advocate.
Yeah.
Most influential book. Zinke, the Navy SEAL, and the Republican congressman just got nominated for House of the Interior Secretary. Mike Lee being vetted as a Supreme Court Justice. I mean, you're...
Matus. I I'm like going, all right, Mad Dog Matus is about as close to a non-interventionist we're going to get at the DOD.
Well, I told Mayo, is like, as libertarian as a 4-star Marine general can be, that would be what Matus is. Like, that's the closest you can get. Because you got to remember, you also have to get people confirmed.
Right.
Like Gary Johnson, like, it would be great to say, can you imagine Gary Johnson's cabinet? I can tell you right now, no one will ever confirm Ron Paul as the federal chairman, the chairman of the Federal Reserve. Like, that would never pass.
Right.
You know, that would never be allowed.
You'd
navigate within the framework and the, you know, straitjacket that you're given.
Libertarians better watch how this goes for Trump, because Trump is a populist outsider, and he is the closest in our lifetime to a libertarian getting elected. I'm not saying his ideology. I'm saying his political capital, his political position in the universe. He's not a part of permanent Washington, and so he is completely outside of what, you know, Bill Weld would respect.
Right. Oh,
and,
yeah.
And so,
because he's an American,
so you're watching how the media and permanent Washington would react to a libertarian president nominating these people,
and watching Gary go and do an apology tour, saying, "Just hear me out."
Right.
To a press that smells blood in the water and can neuter you before you even get sworn in.
Yep.
You don't have the luxury as an outsider in libertarians and politics. You have got to go on an offensive just to give yourself a chance for your ideas to take hold.
And Trump has done a good job of positioning himself as presidential. I'm working hard. I've got Ray Lewis up here talking to the black community. I've got all these IT, you know, I've got
who's who of the tech community.
Except for Twitter.
They're barely a platform at this point.
They're going to die.
Except for him to troll
anyways.
On. They're basically the Trump trolling platform.
Yeah.
Right.
Twitter's not going to make it.
No. Twitter is garbage. And so, but you can follow us at the letter R, libertarians. But yeah, exactly. I mean, he's hard at work. He's doing all this stuff, you know, and he's just, you look at it and you go, why are you guys being such dicks to him? Like, he's not even started.
If this had happened to President Obama, the country would be the KKK. That's how the press would react.
Right.
Everyone in America is the KKK.
Let's say Hillary Clinton wins. And would we ever hear the term fake news?
No.
Right.
No.
They love fake news.
Mm-hmm. Right.
As long as it is beneficial to them.
Yes. They're fake news. Like, fake news like gun statistics.
Right.
Right.
Yeah.
They cherry pick. It's Paul Krugman style things where they cherry pick and manipulate in order to you know, it perfectly fits the narrative they're selling.
Well, that's like the Rolling Stone article of rape on campus. Right. That fake news.
This is a manipulation to marginalize Donald Trump, delegitimize his decisions, delegitimize anything that he does as president on the political side. But on the media side, it is about saying that the conservative media that is starting to catch on and be effective, and clearly it is effective, those people shouldn't be listened to. Alex Jones, who claims to have a weekly footprint of 40 million Americans, that's a big stretch to say that you reach 40 million Americans online. But like, you look at the dude's Facebook and Twitter and YouTube numbers, he's reaching a lot of people. Well, that's a guy that needs to be marginalized, because that's a guy that can't be controlled, and that's a guy that you're competing against, because Alex Jones is a hell of a lot more compelling to watch than Anderson Cooper.
Yeah.
Alex Jones is an absolute...
Than Piers Morgan, clearly. He's lasted way longer.
Alex Jones is... You never know when Alex Jones is going to lose his mind and snarl like a pig because he's ranting so hard. Like, he is... He's fascinating to watch. In terms of keeping your attention and engaging you, he and Donald Trump are very similar.
He's like one part Pentecostal tent revivalist preacher.
Yes.
Then P.T. Barnum.
Yeah.
But then reporter.
I have been surprised at how similar, like, Alex Jones and Glenn Beck hate each other and talk shit about each other, but their content and their ideas are very similar.
Yeah.
And their worldview is very similar, and their platforms are very similar. So it's very funny to see those two hate each other, and like
it's coming from the inside with the acceptable realm of, you know, distinguished press and the try hard also ran that's never been given a, you know, attention ever until now.
Exactly.
So he got it right.
Yeah. Well, so you've got Alex Jones, you've got Breitbart, you've got, you know, Steven Crowder and Roger Stone and Mark Levin, and Mark Levin, Steven Crowder, and what's the twitchy lady? Michelle Malkin just started their own conservative TV network. You know, you've got all these conservative sites that are really starting to take off, and I'm not going to say that Alex Jones is conservative, because Alex Jones is more like populist than he is libertarian.
Drudge nailed it, is that there's really only authoritarian and anti-authoritarian press anymore.
Mm-hmm. Meaning speaking from authority.
Or you're either against totalitarianism or you're not.
I don't buy that. I don't buy into that.
Or on the right.
Oh, okay.
Right. That's what he was talking about.
Like, if you're going
like to Washington Post Republicans or, you know.
Yes.
A Reason.
Yeah.
So, or Breitbart, sorry.
Like to me, there's a wide spectrum. Like, Politico is not pro. Like, Politico is a great source of information. But you have to understand that if you're reading Politico, you're reading a press release from the government.
Yeah.
You're reading what
Pravda. Pravda.
Right. You're reading what is happening in American government. You can be sure that Politico is going to give you, The Hill is going to give you solid information and good reporting. But it is a point of view of the government. And so what that press is not comfortable with, and what the Washington establishment is not comfortable with, is that there is this other press out there like us who are talking to people unfiltered, who are doing a 2-hour podcast saying, here's the history of the CIA and here's why they shouldn't be trusted. Because to those people, the CIA is the ultimate authority.
Yeah.
Well, they have access to far more information than Chris Spangle does sitting in Southport, Indiana. You're exactly right. You're 100% right.
They make sure of that.
I cannot say 100% with certainty that the Russians did or did not hack, quote-unquote, anything. I don't know that the Russians did or did not give the information to WikiLeaks. But I do trust that I like that I know that the election was rigged for Hillary Clinton against Bernie Sanders. I'm glad we know that. It doesn't make that less true that the Russians hacked it and that WikiLeaks exposed it.
Yeah.
It makes it the same level of truth.
Yeah, and like Assange said today, you know, he goes, you know, the media is irrelevant.
Right.
You know, the American media is irrelevant. They haven't been doing their job, and they did this to themselves.
Yeah.
And so you know, and I would leak anything. I would leak right now or anything about Donald Trump in 4 years, anything I found out about Hillary Clinton.
Right.
So that I mean, he's the person I trust.
Yeah.
When you live outside of sunlight in Ecuador's embassy, and that looks like that's going to be your fate the rest of your life, mm-hmm. that's a guy I trust is legit.
Yeah. He's got nothing to lose.
Yeah.
And he is telling you the things that John Podesta says this is all true.
There's no denying it.
There has literally been no denials that any of the things that have been said in WikiLeaks are true.
Yeah.
They deny Pizzagate. They deny that they, you know, eat children. But I would expect them to deny that.
This isn't something people just go around claiming.
It's just not. Yeah, no, I worship Moloch and I love to
eat
babies.
Actually, I'm so sorry. Right. Damn it. Caught again.
I didn't mean to abduct those children with my brother in Connecticut.
Right.
You'd have got me.
Yeah.
Like, so, what?
But hear me out.
Right. So, yeah, the stuff like, the Donna Brazile stuff, leaking questions, debate questions to Hillary Clinton's camp and giving her an advantage over Bernie Sanders in debates, that's Donna Brazile rigging the debates for Hillary Clinton.
Right.
Like, that's not acceptable. And, of course, CNN fired her, but she's still head of the DNC at this point.
If it weren't for Hillary Clinton's supreme incompetence, none of this would be necessary.
Exactly.
Only because of her ineffectiveness as a political candidate and politician would any of this kind of collusion and propaganda and coordination be necessary?
No.
Correct. Yeah, all the tricks had to come out for her to get her to that point.
She spent $1.2 billion and lost. Yeah.
You could tell the fix was in during the debates when she strolled back on stage late after they came back from commercial.
Right.
You knew then. It's like, oh, she knows. She already knows.
Yeah. We're talking about a person that spent $1.2 billion, and yet her polling didn't tell her that she was going to lose Wisconsin and Michigan. And only in the final days started
campaigning. Pennsylvania.
Yeah. And Pennsylvania. You know, they were thinking, like, North Carolina to me was okay, you say it's close, but that's red country, man.
You're underestimating the number of Republicans that are rural and will show. It was, they never accounted for an enthusiasm gap.
The 6 million, it's like six times less.
I mean, there wasn't a person in America that said, I can't wait to go vote for Hillary Clinton. And there were a bunch of rabid dogs at every Trump rally.
Right. If you watch The Circus on Showtime, which is so great, such a good show, and it is the ultimate documentary. It's by two guys that I greatly respect, the ultimate insiders.
And the best political, Halperin's, I have more respect for him than damn near anybody.
Halperin and Heilman are great, and Mark McKinnon?
McKinnon's great. Yeah. He's just such a bushy.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. But I kind of like that.
Oh, yeah.
And so they follow all
the
campaigns.
He can get you in and anywhere.
Yeah, they kind of follow all these campaigns around and kind of document it from the inside and show you all the inner workings and all the behind the scenes, and you really get such a great view of this campaign. And I watched it last weekend, so it's funny to relive all these moments. And
it's funny that anyone would ever consider Ted Cruz after I saw that.
I know.
He's just as fake off the record as he is.
He's so smarmy. And so you're watching it and you see Roger Stone
in the shadows.
In the one episode they interview, Mark Halperin interviews him in his New York apartment, and he interviews him at this one point, and he goes, and I posted it on the We Are Libertarians Instagram account. So you can go watch his couple little points of analysis, and he's just dead on. He's like, well, this is going to happen, and Assange will do this, and then he's going to win. And he was so dead on. And then you go to this spin room at Hillary Clinton headquarters in Brooklyn, and it's, you know, beautiful, millennial, multi-ethnic room, picked because they are multi-ethnic, and it looks like a Tide commercial. You know, it looks like
don't look at the wall art.
Right, and they're just sitting there, and they're literally just watching this Donald Trump speech looking for reasons to be outraged and offended.
It was a trigger room.
That's exactly what it was. It was just a group of people who aren't sitting there doing a campaign thinking about what they're not, and this is the biggest mistake that a campaign can make, and libertarians are supreme mistake makers at this. They think that they are running a campaign for them and that everybody out there is them and not running, like, libertarians shouldn't run campaigns that lay out the libertarian philosophy and say, throw out everything you've believed for your 40 years of existence and adopt this entire philosophy completely. Libertarians should run campaigns that say, okay, what are your issues? What do you care about? Well, here's the libertarian solution to that. And Donald Trump said, okay, I hear you. I understand. And here's what we're going
to
do about it.
Here's
how I'm going to fix it. And Hillary Clinton and her staff said, I'm offended by this. I'm not going to give you a coherent economic message. We're just going to
run anti-Trump.
We're going to run anti-Trump, even though 17 other people lost doing that. They ran the same strategy that did not work in the primaries and expected that because they were better and that they were liberal, that they were going to win.
Well, they just, you know, it was factored in. It was entitlement that XYZ, these people would show up on this day and blue-collar, you know, blue-collar white males with a high school education or some college wouldn't break in as mass droves as they did. You know, that was the failed bet. And
you watch the inside of that campaign and it is all... Well, people are just, they were like me during the whole campaign. Well, the adults are going to wake up and just realize this guy's crude and they're not going to vote for him. People cannot vote for this monster. I said that and I was just wrong because I didn't get that people are tired of feeling poor.
Well, that they don't, you know, he's an advocate where one person saw hatred. The other person on that side saw, you know, he was their advocate they've never had before for the American worker. And he did it in a language that was tough and they've been waiting for and they identified with because they consume reality TV.
Yeah.
They watch Pawn Stars. They watch, you know, Duck Dynasty.
Right.
They love the nasty drama. They're used to it. Yeah. The, you know, no holds barred, Omarosa yelling, screaming.
Like the moment where he goes on Dr. Oz and reveals his
beautiful.
His health results. You know, should I do it? Should I do it? Like that is a brilliant political move because he is speaking directly to his core audience on Dr. Oz in a place that they're familiar with a person that they trust.
Right. It was like when George W. Bush went on Oprah and won the election.
Right. The rules of politics say, well, we need to have a press conference and we need to release the blah, 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 blah. It's like, and then you know who's going to care? The political press.
That's it.
And you know who watches the political press?
The political press.
Right. Exactly.
That's it.
That's why
Seth Meyers.
Right. I'm so disappointed that, with all due respect, was canceled by Bloomberg, which was Heilman and Halperin's Daily Show. It was like the PTI, but it was ultimate insider political nerdism, and I thought it was crack. But Bloomberg canceled it.
They should.
I guess. I hate it, but I think it was
democracy
really...
doesn't give you good content, you know?
It was really more Halperin and Heilman just didn't want to do a Daily Show anymore because they're running Bloomberg politics as well, and they got a TV show, and, you know.
Yeah, they both have aspirations larger than suspending their lives to go and do documentaries, you know?
Right.
That isn't what they do, but it was, you know, Trump, because I guess we were going to talk really about, like, you know, the Russian, that's just not provable. The hacking was done in a way that is so vague in general, the signs are being alleged to be what a Russian hack would look like,
right.
So therefore it's a Russian hack. So there isn't any concrete piece of information unless the CIA is sitting on it and doesn't want to make it public because it's so groundbreaking to American democracy, it'd be tanks in the streets.
Which is what they're doing
right now anyway.
Right.
Correct, yeah. And they're grasping at straws at the whole thing. Like, they keep saying, like, Guccifer, like, he claimed to be Romanian, but we find out his Romanian is actually really bad, and his English is also bad, so he has to be Russian. What? Really?
Okay,
so he couldn't be German?
Harry is the best. Harry does cybersecurity for a living.
No, I don't.
He deconstructs hardware and makes sure that there's no information.
Yeah, I'm an e-recycler.
Upcycler.
Yeah, upcycler.
Harry,
I'm an upcycler. I am not a hacker. I don't do that. I don't do work in security. I am just a humble network administrator.
Okay.
That's all I am. That's all I am.
Okay.
For his profession is hardware.
Yes, I am a humble network
but
administrator.
But you have you understand. You have a great deal
of
knowledge.
I do understand
knowledge.
It, yeah. Being
okay.
A network person, I understand it.
Harry uses computers, therefore he is a hacker. That would be what the CIA's intelligence apparatus would conclude about Harry.
Hackers are heroes.
He does have a hack, the word hack, on his laptop.
That is a
I'm
show.
Sorry. I'm
that is
sorry.
A show.
But
that
Harry's on the internet and he's a nerd.
That's
so
a hack five. That's a podcast. Okay.
He's a nerd and he's on the internet, so I assume he's a hacker.
If you're a black and yellow libertarian that's committed to moving to the Free State Project and you have a lot of knowledge about computers,
hacker,
you have an alter ego you're known by in forums and in IRC chats.
Okay, so Harry
five, but not a hacker, network administrator.
Okay.
humble, humble network administrator.
We have explained this, even though we know tech stuff.
Yeah,
you know, we do.
We're 5 percenters. It's just that right. Harry's that, you know, he's the Mitt Romney of technology.
Right. Yeah. Like Greg and I are like in the JV league, but like he's like,
oh no, we're varsity. It's just that by comparison,
right? We're college athletes, but he's LeBron James.
Yeah.
Oh, thank you. I appreciate that.
And so, that's not a black reference.
No. So, Harry.
Yes.
Do you believe that the Russians were the ones that stole the WikiLeaks and gave it to Julian Assange?
As the Russian is like that, you're trying to say there's like a state actor or a state government.
Yeah.
There is right now currently produced no proof that the Russian government had any involvement with that hack. Everything they have is basically is all reaching at straws. Like even the way they've got in was like a simple email phishing scheme. That's how they dropped the malware on different things. And then they've got the different like, well, like I said, like the one thing that they say they move like Russian hackers and stuff like that. But at different DevCon, like OPSEC talks at DevCon, they even talk about these same types of moves and how you don't screw it up and how you don't get caught. As long as you follow these moves, you're kind of fine. But when but it's all like reaching at straws at that certain point. There's more proof for Pizzagate than that the Russian government hacked the DNC.
So essentially, and we've known this all along, somebody sent John Podesta something
mm-hmm.
that he then clicked on and allowed someone to break into his email.
Possibly pizza related.
So.
Right, yeah, it was a misspelling of domain. It's actually pretty brilliant. And right. That's how you get someone. You find someone top level that you know that believes they're untouchable, and you send them something, and they click on it. That's how you get most people.
Right.
You know, like one of the tools I've got in my hand, like right now, like the USB rubber ducky. You know, it's one of my favorite tools because most people right. see a flash drive and just plug it in. You know,
right.
they just plug it into something like, oh wow, look what happened. But that's
so when you say they were moving like Russian hackers. How do people know how certain people move?
It's more of like it's their type of MO and how they keep things like privacy. You don't try to find them, but
it's how the social engineering, which is what that is called. You're socially engineering a trap.
Correct.
And so that social engineering it was set up in a way that a Russian would set it up.
Correct. But like that doesn't mean every Nigerian prince is really a Russian.
Right.
You know, they just not someone who can type better. And then it's like, oh, we could find some traces back to the IP. It's like, so what? I've got proxies in freaking Russia. That doesn't
Absolutely.
Mean crap.
So it is possible that, let's say, a North Korean or a Chinese official or...
A voluntarist
so,
in yeah, New Hampshire in the yeah, basement. Right. It could be someone in New Hampshire. It could, you know, could be someone in Germany. It could have been someone in South Africa. It could have been, you know, Aaron Ewart in Haiti doing it, you know, bouncing it off a couple of satellites.
So is it 100%... Are we 100% certain that it is... That you can't say for certain who did it.
Correct. You can't tell who did it.
Okay.
You know, they can almost like assume like they economists like, well, we could assume it's Guccifer, but you don't really know that. They kind of claimed for that, but
so
who cares?
Guccifer.
Guccifer is a person that is a hacker that alleged that claimed to hack into the hacked into the DNC.
And he's based hacked off like some of the best email, most like the emails of. The who's who of DC, like
correct.
He's the guy that hacked Colin Powell and then said Bill Clinton was still dicking bimbos.
Yeah, yeah, and he's just, yeah, and that's another thing because since it was Guccifer, like he used a Russian language VPN. That's what he was using, you know. But even though he says he used a Russian VPN to talk to a motherboard he talked to them in Romanian. And they had some Romanians come up and like translate it. Well, actually, you know, if he was actual Romanian, because basically we're just talking proper.
Yeah.
Using proper Romanian. And yeah. like, well,
Formal
Romanian. Well, no one talks like that. You know, it's like, oh, okay. And that's how we could tell he's not Romanian. And his English is broken. And it's like, okay. Or could it just been... He could have spoke Romanian and is like, hey, I've got a great way to throw everybody off. I use the autocorrect feature on here and it has to make sure my Romanian is perfect. you know, or just got some Romanian.
He'd be using IP relay in Romania.
Yeah.
You know, where they only have the dictionary functionality of the language.
Correct. You know, like, and Tim Ferriss is like, has been proven useful as you're showing that you can become fluent in almost some languages or just kind of close in some languages in a few weeks.
From completely functional.
Yeah. You know, yeah. And so he could have been like, he could be Chinese, dude, could be like Indian, or could just been some dude out in BFE America and did it there. You know?
Yeah, there is no way of pointing to who done it.
Correct.
But I mean, you're talking about the American intelligence community, some of the best minds looking at, like, it, you know, clearly saying it was a leak and not a hack. I mean, Clapper testified on Monday that the connection between Russia and WikiLeaks is weak. Mm-hmm. And U.S. intelligence agencies are now refusing to brief the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence on whether or not Russia was the actual source of the WikiLeaks document. So the CIA and FBI are actually saying, we won't go and give you a brief because you kind of called our bluff.
Yeah. And the other thing is, like, the other thing is, I would kind of believe, like, the Russia WikiLeaks connection would be a little bit more secure if I saw, like, a video of Snowden and Julian out at the beach in Russia, like, oh, how did you instantly get from that Ecuadorian ambassador's position right. all the way over up to Russia? That looks like favors have been traded there. But, you know, why would they be connected to it and the dude just still stuck in a room?
Yeah,
it's
so, like, a former United States intelligence officer who personally met the Democratic email leaker, you know, he confirms the leaker is with an American intelligence service. So the source of these leaks. Yeah. So if I mean, like, Zero Hedge has it on there, they're reporting it.
Oh, but that's fake news.
But I'm saying, like, this is the best information that exists.
No. That's on Zero Hedge. That entire website is fake news, Greg.
Yes. Well,
you can't look at that website because it's not, it's fake news.
That's okay.
Yeah. Anderson Cooper told me that website, we shouldn't listen to those facts.
Anybody that hides that they're gay in order to be more mass appeal to American society, I don't respect all that much.
Well, I am offended.
I mean, don't lecture me on validity when you hide something about yourself in order to appeal to the masses.
Yeah.
You know, like, he personally confronts photographers that catch him bike riding through, what's that little Greenwich Village in New York, and asks them not to, so he can have some privacy. When the reality is, his focus group numbers already suffer from a feminine, bend.
Right. His laugh.
There's a reason he was such a good co-host with Kelly Ripa filling in for Regis.
Well, Regis, we all know, you know.
That's an alpha.
Flaming. No. He's basically a slightly more masculine Richard Simmons. I always used to get them confused as a kid.
But yeah, like, so Craig Murray's former U.S. ambassador to Uzbekistan.
Yeah, he's the guy that I was talking about earlier.
Yeah, so he's the one that he met the leak.
In the Guardian, he said, the Guardian, one of the most, it's a...
Glenn Greenwald. Snowden.
Still, I respect the Guardian a lot.
Yeah.
You know, and to be fair, listen, I subscribe to the New York Times, I subscribe to the Washington Post, I read Politico Daily, but, you know, you read that stuff, you read it, and you read it with a critical mind. You go watch the Young Turks, you go read Think Progress, you go read Raw Story, you go read Huffington Post, and then you go read InfoWars, then you go read Glenn Beck, then you go read Breitbart, then you go read The Daily Caller, then you go read, and then you listen to We're Libertarians and get the truth, you read Reason, you read Ron Paul, Lou Rockwell. Like, you have to look at all these different things and go, okay, this is true, this is not true, like...
Look for the reoccurring patterns. Look for the reoccurring names, right. You know, and then you have to make an individual assessment.
One of the things that I just cannot stand is censorship. When somebody just says, this entire wing, this entire website, this entire, like, it drives me crazy. I want to murder Brett Bittner every time I post a Daily Mail article, and he writes on my wall, oh, that's the Daily Mail, that's not blah, 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 blah. It's like, shut up, Bittner. Like, just because it comes from the Daily Mail, it doesn't mean that everything that comes from the Daily Mail is fake.
National Enquirer won a Pulitzer Prize for exposing the John Edwards affair.
If you go read, there was a great documentary called Inquiring Minds on Netflix right now about the birth of the National Enquirer, and their journalistic standards are actually very high.
Yeah.
And yeah, it's
they're just like the British tabloids.
Fascinating documentary. Yeah. Harry, you have something to say.
I do have one more thing. Like, they also have this one thing about they have metadata in the file leaked by Guccifer and shows it was modified by a user that, called Cyrillicus. It's a reference to the founder of the Soviet era secret police. And that thing, the only thing they can tell is that that thing was also edited by in a Russian language setting. But so what? He could be just using an air gap machine and just doing it all in Russian.
It could be someone at the DNC trying to create a Russian outrage when they thought they might lose the election.
Right. It's perfect OPSEC. How can I make them think I'm not some American guy? Do it all in Russian. You know?
Who do I want to frame? Who's the big scary beast that I can get to cause, you know, potentially cause a constitutional crisis?
Because it's an incredibly short leap for the mind. Someone recently called me out because I basically said, I was talking about the Saudi Arabia documentary that I watched on Netflix. I watch a lot of documentaries. And it's
You're so woke.
I'm so woke. But this documentary is Saudi Arabia Unmasked or Saudi Arabia something.
Mm-hmm. And unveiled
it, and it's basically like the inside of Saudi Arabia. They snuck cameras in and you get a real sense of what Saudi Arabia is really like and how awful and how brutal and how dictatorial.
They're no different than ISIS other than they don't want to recreate the caliphate.
Exactly. Mm-hmm. And so what were we talking about before?
Someone called you out for watching a Netflix documentary about Saudi Arabia unveiled and how awful it was. And then the validity of news sources, like Bittner calling you out for Daily Mail.
Right. Harry, what were you... We should probably wrap up. I'm starting to lose it. But Harry, what were you saying just right before this?
Also, I was going to say, like, the phishing emails also came from, like, a Russian-based...
Yeah, they spoofed a website.
Yeah. Right. Well, no, they spoofed a website, but, like, all the emails also came from a Russian email server.
Yeah.
But as we know, anyone can have an email server in their closet, you know, so it's okay.
So, yeah, I mean, it...
And, you know... And the ability is like, when I get online anonymously, I don't look like I'm coming from Indianapolis.
Right.
I come from in a completely different place. I'm not going to say where, because that would defeat the purpose of being anonymous. But when I do it, I'm like, I'm nowhere near the place I'm doing it. Okay, it's kind of hard. I want to talk about it, but I can't want to talk about it because I don't want to copy me or find me when I do it.
Right, but I mean, you've taken so many levels of protection and anonymity that... Proving it would be you beyond all reasonable doubt would be damn near. They'd have to capture you in person.
Oh,
while
really?
You were doing it.
It's really hard. Like the ultimate personality that I get on when I get on anonymously. It's too hard to figure out that it wouldn't be me.
Right. You'd have to make a mistake to get caught.
Yeah. They're so completely different to who I am because I have to read a script first, like almost like a background of playing a character before I get on because I've got to shut down that part. Like this is who I am.
Character.
Right, you get in character.
Sexy Russian agent named Natalia.
No.
Do you wear heels when you're...
No.
ASL.
No.
Question mark.
All right, let's start wrapping up. So final thoughts on this particular issue.
No, I'll tell you, the thing that sealed this all for me, because like now in this environment where we are both, you know, it is post-truth, but it's always been that way. It's just that there's not a consensus anymore. You know, there's so many outlets, there's no controlling narratives. Is when, I don't know if you saw, but the state, Georgia, has asked the Trump administration to investigate why the Department of Homeland Security was trying to hack and access its election tables, its voter drives. Hmm. The actual state, and that's a formal request with the Trump administration. They were targeted and an internal review was done that traced the IP addresses back to Department of Homeland Security. And if you remember... There was one southeastern state that was within the margin of error up until about the last week or so of the election. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Georgia.
Mm. Yeah.
Also home to Brett Bittner.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Coincidence?
Yep. I only support censorship if it is applicable to Bittner.
Harry Price.
But don't like being next to Bittner. He brings out the worst in me.
me too. And his fitness status is every day he's becoming a CrossFitter. It's like, I'm vegan, I'm walking, I'm...
Did you see that a vegan tried to clown Mount Everest to prove they're just as, you know, it had no negative effects and she died? No, not kidding. That actually happened. She died trying to scale Everest. And she was. Her intent was to prove that it had no negative effects in comparison to a meat-based diet.
Where did she go? Where did she die? Because if depending where she dies, she'll be there forever, like orange juice. Anyways, what? No, it's the thing about Everest. You die up there on somewhere so high in the mountain, they can't take you back down because they'll die. So you were just left there. Like, Orange Shoes was dying as people were walking by him, because if anyone stopped and helped Orange Shoes, they would die.
Is that, like, a Christian name? Or
no, no one knows his name. Dude's just wearing orange shoes. Oh. Dude, look at
the unknown soldier type thing.
Yeah, he's still there. He's still up there. Gary passed him on the way up.
Harry?
We have to pass him. It's part of the trail now.
All I know is the vegan is less alpha than the meat eater.
Yeah, but anyways.
And they're trying to ruin America with vegetables.
A couple of things, like, I did want to get off my chest while I've got the power of the microphone right now. Is anyone want to look up the really cool fact that another podcast has put out, the Michael W. Dean has put out the Bitcoin, that's Bravo Indigo Papa Coin, which is really cool, and they've got an Indiegogo fund going on out there for distributed DNS. I'm really interested in that because that's one of the main things I always got hung up on when trying to create a mesh network, or either just using the fiber optic cable that connects and makes everything in the internet, or going past that, or using something else, is like, well, what controls the DNS? Well, the idea of putting it on a blockchain and making it distributed on something like that using Bitcoin seemed, you know, brilliant. And it's, everyone keeps thinking that Namecoin solved that problem. No, Namecoin sucked. Namecoin had too many problems. Just read the Bitcoin white paper on the Indiegogo page. Do some research and really open your eyes to, like, and, like, try to believe, like, Namecoin didn't solve the issue.
Get woke.
Namecoin had brought the idea to the table, put Michael W. Dean.
It was Friendster. Facebook solved the problem. I have. Friendster exposed the
problem. Michael W. Dean is going to make it so you guys can do it, because Namecoin was command line based. I could do Namecoin.
Harry is one of my best friends, even though I understand half of what he talks about. Maybe only 40%.
I just think I only understand his online alter ego.
I only understand 3/5 of what
he's
Harry
Satoshi
says.
Nakamoto.
Whoa, trying to get someone droned.
I made that joke for you, and you didn't even hear it.
Yeah. I'm sorry.
Then
what about black people?
I understand 3/5 of what Harry says.
Yeah. I was purposefully ignoring it because I, unlike you, I love the black people. The black people love me. I'm like the Trump. Trump, yay.
All right. Harry, I didn't mean to cut you off.
You're fine. I just wanted to get that stuff out there about Bitcoin. I thought it was really, really cool. And also like to give a shout out to all those people that did help out for the free Rossathon. I pitched in, for everyone else that pitched in or saw that and looked at the fundraiser. I want to say thank you.
Explain that, please.
Free Rossathon, it was a fundraiser, and you can still donate money if you missed it, for Ross Ulbricht, the suspected person who ran the Silk Road.
Dread Pirate Roberts.
Who is the Dread Pirate Roberts, and they're trying to get enough money to go back and try to go for appeal. It's a very inexpensive process. It's very expensive process to go after it, and there's a lot of new information that was brought to light. Like, someone logged back in as Dread Pirate Roberts after Ross was in jail. Someone logged in. So, is he really Dread Pirate Roberts? The other thing with it is that there's still money missing. There's a lot of corrupt officials that they could not bring up in trial. A lot of
the guy that actually he tried to keep a bunch of the Bitcoin. The government agent with
correct.
The FBI ended up trying to take about 80 million worth of Bitcoin.
Yeah, most of them have been indicted.
Yeah, it was an inside job.
Yeah, and there's still Bitcoins missing. Yeah, there's still Bitcoins missing.
I thought that was impossible with blockchain, which you just told me was going to solve the DNS problem. That Namecoin didn't.
No. Okay, I've.
You understood. Okay.
No. That's different.
You just promised me this thing that you can't even track where the bitcoins go. Why do I want a blockchain if I don't know where any of the bitcoins are going that don't exist in real life? How do I know that Bitcoin isn't an inside job to create a cashless society?
Yeah.
You don't know, though. That's the creepy thing about it. That's the one thing about it.
I do, because I'm sitting next to Satoshi Nakamoto.
That's because of, like, Satoshi Nakamoto, because it's so. Secret of the weird thing about it is, like, most programmers, most people, tech guys are into something, they're going to leech it out. They're going to talk about it. And the simple fact that Bitcoin was, like, barely talked about, don't know who one the paper. Guy was, and was like, boom, released. And then it's like a couple of different things in Ghost. It's like, whoa, this is nuts. This is weird, you know? And you know there's a couple of people that do probably know who this person is, be it man, woman, or whatever, or alien being from, or, you know, some time-traveling man with that shoe on his head. Who knows? No one knows.
That seems...
Way to put people off the scent, Harry. Satoshi. The real question is whether you're a plant of the CIA.
All I know is they have shiny shoes, and I wish them the best of luck.
Shiny orange shoes. Yeah. All right, so my final thought is... I take the fake news stuff. I remember saying on the show, you know... The mainstream media just labeling alt-right, like, I don't want to be anywhere near Robert Spencer. Like, the dude is a white supremacist. I don't want to be anywhere near that guy. I don't want to be associated with that guy. But it's so easy to say, oh, well, We Are Libertarians is just alt-right. Or, oh, they shared Russia Today, or they shared a Sputnik, or they had a Russian, an American living in Russia saying nice things about Russia on a podcast, you know, a month ago. They're Russian propaganda, so don't listen to them. And, you know, somebody like Glenn Beck or Alex Jones or Breitbart or Daily Caller and Tucker Carlson, they're big enough that they can fight it, and they're on multi-channels. You know, they can come out, and they have garnered their audience. You know, but when you're an upstart aspiring media outlet, when you're an organization like We Are Libertarians that is... you know, not even an organization yet, that is starting a podcast, built out a website, and drawing up plans for the future. With a dream and some memes. It's very easy to get cast into. It's the smaller guys that get shut out first.
They're the low-hanging fruit that you can
absolutely feather. They don't have the audience that can then, you know, if Facebook partners with PolitiFact, and let's be honest, Facebook, all they do is they weed out porn. They don't sit there and judge what is or is not acceptable political speech. And
they do now.
And I don't
want
them.
They laid out their 7-step framework for allowing users to submit something as a fake news story.
Right. I don't want that. Mm-hmm. I don't want them having that responsibility, because there's 4 tech giants. Realistically, that is the internet for people. It's Apple, it's Google, it's Facebook, and it's Twitter and their products. And for a younger generation, it's Snapchat and Instagram. Would you let me finish? Snapchat and Tumblr. So it's not a big universe for most people on the internet.
No, it's like any network effect business is one becomes a default standard, and trying to create any alternative is really... at a certain scale, just becomes a wasted effort.
Right.
It's AlphaGoog and Amazon.
Right.
Amazon on a world domination
tour. They're distributed services that provide the framework for, you know, they're the Cisco of social web.
Yeah, and they're once they take over Uber, it's going to be awful. Just if they're on a world domination tour, just watch it and just get out of it. Either get on the train of Amazon or get out of the way.
I'm on. Good. I'm on it.
Yeah, they're coming.
Give me that Prime, baby. I love those wish lists.
Saying if something, there's a lesson to be learned. If you want global domination, offer unlimited e-reading.
Yes.
Yeah.
2-day shipping for $99 a month. That's what it costs to
rule the world.
Alexander the Great.
Yeah. Now with the drone shipping going out now, and the Amazon and the Ghost store, where you can pick up like food and you don't have to talk to nobody. You don't have to dang person, you just walk in and get food to get out. The moment you start being able to drop your packages off there.
That's a libertarian dream.
Once you be able to get your packages delivered there and you just pick your packages up so you don't have to leave them at your doorstep, oh, man, they're done.
There are the unknowns like Akamai and Amazon Web Services and all that stuff, but I'm talking like for most people, they access 4 services, and those are very powerful services. If you're not on the Apple Store for an app, and you're not on Google Play, you're not an app. If you're not...
Even though there's other places out there, you can go to the F-Droid store or Amazon.
Could you please stop
interrupting...
You're
the Jill Stein of apps.
You're interrupting my rant with your nerd talk.
Finally, go to the banjo or banyo.
So it's just, it's very dangerous when you start asking these services to begin censoring political speech, you know, and if Facebook somehow gets WeAreLibertarians.com on their list of, well, this is propaganda, this is fake news, we need to censor this, there isn't going to be recourse for us. There isn't going to be a process for us to get unfake newsed, you know, and maybe if we had enough money and power, you know, a Glenn Beck can get a meeting with Mark Zuckerberg. A Chris Spangle cannot. You know, so it is, you have to really be responsible with what you report and make sure you don't report things that aren't actually, you know,
you violated
fake news.
There was one rule.
So,
now you are the Bin Laden of ISIS.
I know.
Enemy number one.
Now I'm just trolling.
Of digital ISIS.
But it is important, and it is important that you share us. It is important that you help us grow, because the bigger the voice we have, the bigger the voice you have. And the bigger voice we have, the bigger... If you believe in our ideology, if you believe in what we're doing, then we need you to have some capital. We need you to share. We need you to help us grow, and we need you to get involved. We do this because we have found so many of you writing us and saying, I have changed my worldview. I see things differently. I see things in a more humane way. I see humanity in a more empathetic way. I see government differently. I don't see it as the ultimate authority. I see it as something that ought to be questioned. We don't believe that government is inherently dangerous.
No.
I believe that government is inherently stupid.
It's an amplification of whoever's given access to control it.
Exactly. It's something that needs to be questioned because it can grow too large.
Yeah, and there's very few stops against it.
Harry,
I think government is dangerous. And I think they're inherently dangerous.
So Harry is for the end of government, and that's fine. I'm all
is
for
Silk,
that.
Was Silk Road inherently dangerous?
No.
Why would government be any different?
I just think you could go for like state-run government. Like if it's a voluntary piece of government, like people coming together to grow for something voluntarily, and you can opt out and get the heck out, or have to opt into said government.
Roger.
Yeah, it'd be okay.
Competition.
Yeah.
The lack of competition and alternatives.
Roger Paxton would be so disappointed in you.
What? No, this is, I get a lot of crap from a lot of the anarchists because like I believe like a true anarchist state will, or even be able to write down the ideas of true anarchism you have to have a minarchism first to even see an anarchism. Like, those children will have to be born in a minarchist state to understand, like, you're able to sit there like, wait a minute, we can go one step further and get rid of all this together.
God bless you, Harry. I wouldn't want to hang out with those people. I couldn't
that's
imagine.
That's what Parkfest is.
Yeah, like,
But no, it's the point is that like, you can get so drugged down into a debate
showers.
Like that.
Right.
And you realize at the same time the debate you're having online is being monitored 24/7.
Yeah.
It's inevitable the state will. It's either inevitable, it'll just wither away, or we have to have it. In the meantime, there's an NSA agent that's just bulk collecting all of it.
Right. Yeah. And it freaking stinks that we can't get off this piece of junk. Like, it just burns me up that we're all, like, stuck. Like, everyone's so worried about Facebook censoring everything, then it's easy to create something to leave or just be a part of it. This is not, like...
It isn't, though.
Yes, it is.
Hold on,
No. It is easy to get going because you have to think this is all federated code. You can easily set up your own server like using like the Friendica code and be able to interact with Facebook.
You
but you're
are
on
such
your...
a libertarian. You think that the technology is the value. It's not the value.
Exactly.
It's the experience. It's the people.
It's the people
availability.
That are there.
That's the thing. You can still have all that. You can have all that.
Yes, but it's the mass trans. It's
you
the,
can have
if,
all that.
The porting of everyone over.
You don't understand. It's like email. Just because you use Outlook, Gmail, Roundcube, whatever you want to use, you can use Friendica to interact with Facebook.
Yes.
You can do what you want, say what you want. You don't have to worry about the fear of being banned.
But
it's all federated code.
But as a brand, we have to be on Facebook. That is where people are.
It's the default operating system of the
social environment.
Yeah.
So if we want to grow, we can't be on Friendica.
It's like saying, why won't these people just get on board with Betamax? This VHS thing is a fad.
No, you're seeing it.
They don't understand how much. I know. I get it. That you can interact. That you don't have to be.
We don't.
You
can.
What's the global messenger that would interact with AIM, Yahoo Messenger?
Trillion.
Yeah. That's what it is. It is a conversion and interaction tube. Pigeon
sucked.
But that's all it is. But the point is, they don't want to go through the headache of having to do that when they're already on Facebook, and that's where the majority of people are anyway.
Right. Most people don't care as much as you care, Harry.
You guys will care the moment the day that Facebook shuts down and you have no ability to talk to everybody because you guys don't have everybody's email address. You have no way to email anyone. You have no way to call everyone because people communicate with people is Facebook. You have no phone numbers. Or if someone does have a phone number, it's all on their freaking phones and not all like written on paper in their back pocket.
He's turned full Maya there for a second.
He's Luddite.
Not a Luddite. It's just
you're more, a Luddite.
It's just more of a, like having a backup to be able to talk to somebody, you know? Because like when
you're like
when,
in the fire sale in the last Die Hard, where you're operating on like the forgotten analog mobile network.
I operate on an analog network.
All right, we got
Satoshi Nakamoto.
We got to wrap up, but I'm just saying that you know it is vitally important that if you love the media that you listen to, if you love We Are Libertarians, then you got to support us. And the way you do that is by telling people about us and sharing our content, sharing our podcast, sharing our web post, sharing what we write on Facebook. You can follow us on Facebook. You can follow us on Twitter. You can find Greg and I personally at WeAreLibertarians.com along with all the We Are Libertarians brand sites. So check that out on the sidebar of We Are Libertarians. And hey, if you want to sign up and donate, then that really helps out as well. So because that's the model, you're going to, if you enjoy content that someone gives you, if you enjoy information that people give you, then you're going to have to pitch in and throw them a few bucks a month. That's it. And there was a podcast that was recorded that I was not a part of on Friday night at the We Are Libertarians party because I was sick, that apparently is in need of editing because Harry thinks it's too racist, and Harry's the most racist person I know, and Greg agrees, and he's the second. And
I'm not racist. I'm in the alt-right.
So we're gonna give that out to the people that donate monthly through Patreon or PayPal. So check that out. Look for it soon. Thank you so much for listening to We Are Libertarians. Thank you so much for listening to all this fake news and all these opinions. I guarantee that most of the political establishment does not want that to happen. So all the more reason to share this, folks.
Every time you listen, John Podesta cries and orders a new child.
All right. Thank you so much for listening to We Are Libertarians. And we promise to do better next time.
You missed, as always.
As always, we promise
to do better next time.
I need a nap.
Yeah.
Hi. Yeah, it's me. It's Chris Spangle. You know, the funny thing about doing a podcast is that unless people talk with you on social media, you have no idea who's listening. You don't know who's listening. And you have no idea what the audience looks like. I'm guessing male, you know, young, white. But we don't know for sure. I'm sure you're all very good looking, though. But tell us a little bit more about yourself and about what you like or don't like about the show by going to WeAreLibertarians.com, scroll down to the bottom on the sidebar, and take our listener survey. It really helps us out. It helps us understand who you are and what you like. And then we ignore it. No, I'm just kidding. I'm just kidding. Greg ignores it because Greg's a dick. But I listen to it. I take everything you say very seriously. So what we've learned is go to WeAreLibertarians.com, scroll down to the bottom, scroll down to the sidebar on the right, take the listener survey, I will read it, Greg will ignore it, Greg is a dick. All right, thank you for considering taking 2 minutes out of your day to make We Are Libertarians better. Greg is a dick. Thank you for listening to the We Are Libertarians Network. Get our other shows at WeAreLibertarians.com.